I'm sorry, I put you to the time. But are you supposed to just
and then we'll send the letter, the director general, and then later the deputy director general, Mr. Pini Padahashi, to attend the meeting schedule today, and then also to be the council officer for the day. And when it comes to any appointees from your side, the minister, the next minister, Mr. Padahashi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you and to all of the members. I apologize for the meeting and the DG as well.
time you come up to that, we'll be in charge and back to Lorena. Let's start with Anna Rudnick, and I'm going to start with Dr. Fox. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Chair, and good morning to the Honourable Members. And thank you once again for the opportunity to allow the Department to present you with a report on the readiness to administer ANA 2012. I'm almost certain that we are all anxiously awaiting the outcome of the annual national assessment, which is indeed one of the flagship programs of the Department of Education. But more importantly, I think for our learners, it's an important initiative which allows them to be evaluated on the basis of a national test. I'm going to very briefly look at the progress up to this point and touch on some of the key activities relating to ANA, particularly issues around registration, administration, and then I would conclude with the support to them. Just to start by saying that standardized testing is not new to South Africa. We have been experimenting with some form of national testing, but also to add, Honourable Members, that standardized testing is an international practice that serves a useful tool in terms of assessing student achievement, but it's also used internationally to focus attention on desired outcomes. I think in our African context, in keeping with Action Plan 2014, we are concerned about the literacy and numeracy skills of our learners, and hence evaluating learners and establishing what their weaknesses are, what their strengths are, allows us to be able to focus on particular interventions which then would lead to certain desired outcomes. And just to indicate that in the USA, we have the NAEP, which is referred to as the National Assessment for Educational Performance. In Brazil, we have the annual national assessment, which is known as the PROVA Brasil. UK, we have the T-Stage test, Australia, course skill testing, and South Africa, homegrown product, which is referred to as ANA, or the annual national assessment. In terms of the countdown, we have 27 school days to go. In terms of total calendar days, we have 41 days to go. So 27 school days is not a long way off. The first test will be written on the 18th of September. Now, very quickly, just to provide the Honourable Members with some kind of background and introduction, ANA provides credible and reliable information for monitoring progress in learner performance toward achieving, like I mentioned earlier, the national goal of improving the quality of basic education. And that is the ultimate focus of the ANA. It's not a test or an assessment for the sake of a test. It's not an event in itself, not an end in itself. It's about using the test outcome to improve the quality of learner performance and therefore the quality of basic education. Now, if one looks at any national assessment, it can be used for various purposes. Firstly, it serves as a diagnostic tool, which I've spoken about as well, identifying strengths and weaknesses. It also has an important spin-off in terms of exposing good assessment practices. You would agree with me that our teachers are never confident of the standards of their assessment. And with a national assessment, teachers are all exposed to a national standard. We are also saying that in the minister's intervention focuses on districts, we are going to, through the national system, come up with a district-based report. And the district-based report will then focus on schools within the district that are underperforming. And in addition to that, provide a clear diagnosis of the problems pertaining to particular schools. And I think on the positive side, sometimes we tend to focus on just weaknesses, but I think
honor will also allow our excellent schools to celebrate their outstanding performance. Whenever one talks about outstanding performance, it has to be against the national standard, and that certainly will warrant celebration. And we believe that schools that do well must be encouraged, because such kind of encouragement will cause these schools to move to higher and greater heights. It also serves as an important tool in terms of providing parents with information about their child's performance. And as much as we are encouraging parents to become involved, we need to provide them with the information that will allow for that kind of engagement. Honor will be administered from grades 1 to 6, as well as grade 9, in all public schools. And also, I think it's important to note that independent schools that are seeking government subsidy will also participate in the annual national assessment. In the case of independent schools, it would be the highest grade in that particular school, which would either be grade 3 or 6. In terms of preparing for the annual national assessment, honorable members, we realize that there are four critical issues that we need to focus on. And we've kept our eyes on these four balls. And they are firstly the instrument, the test itself, how the test gets administered, the marking, and the subsequent moderation, and finally, and most important, is analysis and feedback. If we do not make sure that the loop in terms of analysis and feedback is complete, then ANA becomes an event on its own. And also, I think we are quite realistic about what were the shortcomings in 2011, and we spent immense time in interrogating what are those shortcomings with a view to making sure that in 2012, the administrative processes are improved so that we can enhance the capability of ANA 2012. And in the next slide, Honorable Chair, I've listed some of the limitations in very broad terms. In 2011, it was our first major full-scale assessment. So in any undertaking of this nature, one would expect deficiencies. But like I mentioned, we focused on them and they would certainly not be a repetition of some of those issues. We also admit that we had problems with the translation of our question papers, which we have sought to improve this time around. Test administrative processes were not strictly followed across all schools. In a standardized assessment, it's not only about standardizing the assessment task, it's also about standardizing the actual test administration. And last year, that was not done, even though we had provided training and a manual and the like. But we believe that the first experience will certainly help to improve the second time round. Marking was not consistent, and I'll tell you about what we're doing this year to improve the consistency of marking. The data collection, we did not manage to get in clean data, because we could collect data, but data needs to be clean, and only then can one say that the data you have is valid and reliable. In the next slide, Honorable Chair, I just quickly give you a sense to recap in terms of what was our performance like. It's not very encouraging. We're looking at a range of an average between 28 and 35, focusing on grade 3, literacy and numeracy, and we certainly have put much effort into making sure that the performance in 2012 is an improvement of these average scores that you see in that table. In the next graph, honorable members, I just present to you a slide which gives you an overview of the performance from grade 1 to 6, and there are two graphs. The taller graph represents the average percentage attained in grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And the shorter bar graph represents the percentage of candidates that obtained above level 4, which is 70%. And if one looks at that, moving from grade 1 to grade 6, our top performance in terms of the grade 11 test was certainly low. And I think these learners that perform above 70% are the learners that we want to encourage and make sure that they improve their performance on an annual basis. The first slide looks at literacy, and the second slide, or the second bar graph, refers to numeracy from grades 1 to 6, and comparing that with the percentage of learners that gained above 70% in each of those grades. And now, Honorable Chair, to move on to the key components in terms of, and I start with the development of the test. The test is the core. And I think this time around, Honorable Members, we have upped our game in terms of appointing an advisory committee. And the advisory committee comprised of experts in assessment across the grades, and we also included international expertise. We had one international expert from the World Bank, and after the tests were developed, we presented it to the advisory committee, and their comments were then incorporated. So therefore, we are confident of the standard at which the test is taken. But remember, honorable members, that as much as one can review and improve the test, standards are always elusive, and standards will only improve as we move from one year to the other. So from our perspective, we've done well, but obviously, one only gets a better sense of what the standard is after the test has been written, and one looks at the learner performance based on the standard of that test. And we would be comparing performance in 2012 to 2011 to establish where are the standards in terms of this continuum from one year to the other. We also have adapted the test for our deaf learners and also the blind, and currently, as I speak, the tests are being brailled so that we make sure that every blind learner has a braille test in front of him on the 18th of September. Then comes the other important component, honorable members, which is learner registration. You will agree with me that one can only conduct an exercise of this magnitude if you have correct data in terms of numbers of learners, where are they located, what are the numbers per class, per grade in terms of language, and that is a critical issue. And what we've done is we embarked on a process of registering every learner like we would do in the case of a grade 12 examination. So we appointed a service provider, we sent out schedules to schools, schools captured the data on hard copy, which was then transferred onto a computer system. And that capture process was completed by the end of June. Registration schedules were then printed, and they were sent back to schools. And amendments coming from the checking process with each of the 25,000 schools in the country is currently being captured on the GET system. To further enhance and ensure that the data we have is accurate, honorable members, we have conducted a triangulation process where we took the data that we captured, compared that with our workbook data, as well as the SNAP survey, which was conducted in 2012. And we find that the data is comparable, and that allows us to have a sense of confidence in terms of the data. But I must also indicate, members, that we are continuously validating the data, and currently we have a team that's visiting each of the provinces in the country, sitting with the database managers and doing audits and checking and phone schools to make sure that we get this aspect right. Our target is to ensure that there are no shortages at schools, there's no confusion in terms of languages. So much is being done in terms of ensuring that that happens. The next slide then looks at where we are currently in terms of the data capture. We are looking at a total of 6.9 million learners writing the ANA assessment in 2012. Of the 6.9 million, we have on our database at the moment 6.746. So there are about 200,000 learners that we still have not captured on the system. And the reasons being is that these could be our special schools. Now, when I get special schools, it would be learners with severe challenges that will not be writing the examination. And also we have grade 9, which we need to sort out. as much as we talk about 25,000 schools, but there may be grade 9 learners that are not in our FET schools or in our high school. So those are the issues that we are currently sorting out in terms of the data. Then moving on to printing, packing, and distribution, just to give the house an indication, we're talking about 6.97 million learners. We have to print in total an estimated 14 million tests. And if one looks at each test comprising approximately between 8 to 10 pages, we're looking at a print volume of about 140 million pages that need to be printed. So it is a mammoth exercise, and an exercise of this nature has not been conducted before. Remember last year the test was conducted up to grade 6, so this year the grade 9 makes this the biggest exercise ever. In the case of printing, five provinces, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN, have acted to take on the responsibility of printing, packing, and distributing on their own. The other remaining provinces will be managed by the DBT. And what has happened in the case of these provinces is that we have outsourced printing, packing, and distribution to a service provider, and that process is currently underway. I can also mention that distribution points have been established in each of the PDs from where tests will be collected by school principals or alternatively taken directly to the schools by district officials. In the next slide, I look at the kind of flow diagram which summarizes the entire distribution chain. Tests were completed in terms of their setting and reviewed by the 30th of June. Printing of ANAC tests have in most provinces been completed, although some of them are still dealing with the latter part of the printing, but our scheduled date was the 3rd. Packing amongst all provinces will be completed by the 17th of August. And then the deadline that we're giving to all provinces is that by the 24th of August, the packed test per school should be in the provincial warehouse by the 24th of August. And what we will then do, Honorable Chair, is to conduct an audit at these warehouses to make sure that the packing per school has been accurately done. We have a total of 220 distribution points, and on the 31st of August, that would be the last day by which all packed material should be at the distribution point. And we are anticipating that every school in the country will have the test by the 14th of September. Now, 14th September is the Friday before the tests are written, and that will give us some time to allow our principals to check that they have the required tests in terms of the language of learning and teaching in the school so that corrections can be made. In terms of test administration, we talk about a universal ANA, which is a universal test that will be written by all learners. But in order to verify and validate, and in keeping with the presidential injunction, we have what we call a verification ANA. And the verification ANA would be administered independently by an independent service provider. I'll tell you a little more about that in a later slide. With selected schools have been selected already, and the verification ANA will be administered. The test will then be collected and marked by the independent service provider, and an independent report will be compiled and presented to the minister. So that date, which is independently administered, collected, reviewed, and then consolidated, will then be compared with the universal ANA, which is administered by our teachers and marked by our teachers. But going back to test administration, in terms of universal ANA, we've conducted orientation sessions across all provinces just to brief provincial officials in terms of how the test needs to be administered. How do you deal with learners with special needs? How do you make sure that the language of learning and teaching is correct? And what happens after the test is administered? And we have also asked provincial departments to make sure that the provincial training is then cascaded down to district, to circuit level, and finally to to the school. And I think what is important for us to be reminded again, that in the case of grades 1 and 2, the test will be read out to learners, and this will then make sure that the test is conducted under the same condition that learners are normally tested under normal conditions in their schools in terms of grades 1 and 2. And we have a test manual which has been developed, and that test manual will be made available to every school, which they could then use in standardizing the test administration process. Marking. I suppose this is a concern to all of us, because tests are set centrally by the best experts, but then the big question is, what happens with marking? And for this year, I can indicate that we will be conducting a national marking guideline discussion, where the marking guideline gets discussed nationally, and at that national meeting, we will have representatives from each of the provinces. So this national meeting serves two purposes. One, it allows provincial departments to make their inputs into the marking guideline. But thereafter, it allows for the marking guideline to be standardized so that the marking that takes place across the country takes place on the basis of a common standard. What we've been asking provinces to do is to replicate that national marking guideline discussion in each of the provinces. And that will allow for further input and allow for further understanding of the memo and how the memo gets applied. The marking will take place by teachers in their schools across all grades, but what we're doing differently this year, which we didn't do last year, is to collect a sample from each school in grades 3, 6, and 9, and to bring that to a central point where we will appoint our best teachers to do a moderation of the sample per grade and per school. And this will allow us to provide feedback to the teachers who marked the test already to give them an indication of how does their marking at the school compare with the marking that is conducted by your experts at a central venue. Now, the sample for this year ranges between, depending on the number of classes, we're talking about 3 scripts per class. So if there's one class, we'll have 3 scripts per grade per class. But in bigger schools, if there are 5 classes, you'll have 15 scripts. And having consulted with our statisticians, they indicate to us that the sample size we're using is a reasonable sample to be able to make inferences on the standard of marking in the school. But at the school level, we are also asking our senior teachers and HOD to do the moderation, and we're also asking districts to conduct their own moderation. But all of this must happen under the firm and close supervision of the school principal. We're anticipating that all marking and moderation, together with the completion of the mark sheets, will be done by the 26th of September. And then we would move to the centralized marking, which will take place at particular venues that have already been identified by the provincial department. In terms of marking, again, to standardize marking across schools, we've developed a detailed marking manual. And we've workshopped the marking guideline nationally, which will then be workshopped provincially to ensure that common procedures are followed across all schools. The PD will be responsible for the selection and appointment of markers that would serve at the centralized venue. And marks will then be captured centrally. And in terms of the capture of marks, honorable members, we're looking at capturing all marks and not just the marks that have been moderated. So all 6.9 million learners, their marks will be captured on the system and processed. And we're hoping that all of that will be completed by the end of October, moving into November, so that the minister could then publish the results by middle of December. Just to go back to the ANA verification, which I'm sure all of you are interested in, to make sure that there is some kind of validity to what we are doing. Because if one looks at international practice, standardized assessments are always conducted by an independent body, and therefore we thought this kind of independence is useful. The sample size we're looking at is 2,168 schools nationally, which is an estimated 125 schools per province. But the other verification in the main will focus on day 3, 6, and 9. But we'll also do a light touch verification of 1, 2, 4, and 5. We're looking at 50 schools per province, giving us a total of 450 schools nationally. And what is important is that the service provider, the independent service provider, will monitor the administration at the school to make sure that proper procedure is complied with. And like I mentioned, tests will be marked by them independently. So the test will be administered, the tests get taken away. They're not marked by the teacher, or not even looked at by the teacher, so that there's no chances of any kind of tampering of the scripts. And finally, that report will be presented to the minister. But also what's important, the service provider is going to do a per-item analysis of those scripts that are marked by them. And that will then allow us to look at specifically what are the areas of weaknesses per question and how that can be remediated. And then moving towards the other important aspect, and coming towards closure, Honorable Chair, is the support to learners. And Mr. Mweli, who's our DG, handles this particular aspect. And what we've done, and we are saying that it's senseless exposing learners to be tested year on year if we don't make sure that we provide them with the appropriate teaching and learning and additional support where possible. Now, these are some of the activities that we have done already. For example, immediately after the 2011 ANA was written, we put together a detailed analytical report which looked at national performance, district performance, and school data, and that report was presented to this committee already. We developed a guideline on how the data must be utilized at district level, at school level, by the individual teacher. We produced a detailed qualitative report, which is a diagnostic report, and that has been distributed to all schools. We produced exemplars. In fact, we produced exemplars per term, for term 1, term 2, and term 3. And then we produced a complete test, which resembles the test that learners will write in September. And we also developed something which we think will help our teachers with understanding the scope and the depth. We're calling it an assessment guideline, which actually points out to teachers that in terms of these different learning outcomes, this is the content area that you need to focus on. And we thought this was important because the test is being written in September, and we did not want teachers and schools complaining that it was written in September and was work that they had not covered, which was then tested. So that will take care of that. But besides that, we think that there's been a sense of awareness amongst teachers, officials, communities at large to support their learners in preparation for ANA 2012. In addition to these specific interventions which targeted ANA per se, I think generally these interventions, which is on the secular slide, talks about our focus in the department on curriculum coverage for 2012, where we have a specific monitoring tool which is completed on a monthly basis and looked at by districts to make sure that we monitor syllabus completion in each of our schools. The whole notion of improving teacher accountability and improving class attendance through the various mechanisms that we have currently in our schools. The focus on early childhood development, and I think all honorable members are fully aware of that. And then our LITNUM plan, which focuses on literacy and numeracy, and then our MST plan, which focuses on math, science, and technology. Honorable Chair, this brings me to the end, and I hope that I've done justice in terms of what the House would want to be informed about. But all I can say in conclusion is that the ANA processes are on track. But however, as much as I say that, with an exercise of this magnitude, 7 million learners, and the printing of 14 million tests, one would expect minor glitches. But we believe that we have the contingency plan in place to deal with whatever risks and shortcomings that may occur between now and the final release of the report. And again, we believe that ANA would drive us forward in terms of achieving our goals and the outcomes of Action Plan 2014. In conclusion, just to say, Honorable Chair, that ANA is more than a test. It is a diagnostic tool that guides the nation en route to developing quality basic education. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Pollock. The report was comprehensive, but there is certain timelines that, one timeline that I'm going to query, but not now, and we'll keep you accountable for the timelines within the report. I'm opening the report for questions by the members. Let us start with two questions first. Let's see. I'll come right down. I'll start with Honorable Shuana. Then I'll go to Honorable Mushishi. Then Honorable Mponshana. Honorable Lafro. Honorable Makuprela. Then lastly, Honorable Dina.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Please.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions. The first one on learner registration. I don't understand why we must have anything less than or above 100 when it comes to sharing of learners, if we can say that we can account for all the learners in our schools. But when we look at, slide, I think slide number 12, it shows that actually, except for housing, where we have 100 learners captured, all these others have captured less, and it's even with when Northern Cape have captured 101% learners, more than the learners that they know. And that's why I don't understand this. Because I believe for you to be able to, even in a simple family, you need to know how many people are there, you know, to take care of all of them. And it's like we don't have the exact numbers for sure. If one looks at this, like the story here about who are captured and who are, the percentage of the captured, to me, if I understand this thing correctly. And secondly, on quality, I'm checking on, there is no number for this particular slide, but it's learner performance, where it's like this performance is related to the wealth. I don't know how to put this. You see, you look at the provinces, it's an open secret that people in Gauteng are not necessarily poor, and people may be in Limpopo, and I just want to give Limpopo as an example, come from villages, therefore they may not, they may fall into the don't have of this world. Now, I'm checking if something can be done to improve this. Because it means year in and year out, we know that if you say at a place where there is poverty, you cannot perform correctly. And my understanding is that there are people who come from the poorest areas who have reached the highest ladder in education. So it's possible for people to so what can we do to make sure that you don't have to succeed if you stay maybe at a wealthy area? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
And thanks for the the presentation. My question, I heard the presenter talking about this is a tool, it guides the nation. So I just want to, because you talked about that the monitoring tool is completed on a monthly basis. Actually, so far, didn't you discover any shortcomings? As you said, it is the monitor tool is completed on a monthly basis. I want to know about the shortcoming. And then lastly, you talk about the orientation process on learners on special needs. You said it's calculated to the provinces. I just want to check when. When have you started? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the presenter. Chairperson, we cannot deny the fact that testing forms part of a very important part of the teaching practice, and that's why one would support Anna. But I've got two questions. On your first slide, you rightly point out that in the whole exercise, you'd like to involve parents. But in your presentation, nowhere in your presentation have I seen how you're going to involve parents in this important exercise. And because the reality is that the bulk of our parents, especially those in rural areas and schools, aren't able to follow up in their children's education because they are not educated. But how are you assisting, how are you going to assist these parents to be part of the whole exercise, as you rightly indicated in your objectives? And the second question, the last Anna did indicate that one of the major weaknesses was the lack of subject competence by our educators, that most of our teachers were not really competent to teach the essential subjects like mathematics and science. Because, let us admit, this testing is the last exercise after everything has been done. I don't see this major effort. I know you are saying it will be the orientation workshops and this and that, but we need this massive empowerment program for our teachers to make them competent. I remember one of the presentations by one of the NGOs gave a very striking research. She said, in fact, about, was it 90%? Though one was a bit skeptical. She said about 90% of our teachers were not competent to teach the subjects. Now we need that. But tied to that, in fact, there is this endangered species in the whole education system. You are saying they will be responsible for delivering material, but all that they are responsible for, these inspectors. What? Why? What? Because we need to know what is happening in the classroom, you know. But we don't seem to know what is happening. In fact, the Minister of Education said as much. She said no, she didn't know what was happening in the classroom recently. And yet we have these tests, you know. What are you going to do at the deep level, in fact, where these officials are located, to empower them, even to improve their role, to give them a meaning role in the whole education endeavor? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to note that we only have up to slide number 12 in our handout, so it would be good to get the additional slides. I just wanted to understand, with respect to, and I suppose it links to the parents, I understand that parents are getting reports. You know, once the annual results are out, each child's parent gets a report to say what his or her child scored in the literacy or numeracy test. Now, the majority of children are failing dismally, in fact. The majority of children are failing dismally, and yet they pass their standard. How does a parent understand that? I don't understand it. If I see from the numeracy test or from the literacy test, that child in grade 3 or grade 6 and now grade 9 is nowhere near the literacy or numeracy level that they should have achieved in grade 3 or 6 or 9, and yet they are passing grade 3 or 6 or 9. How does that possibly make sense? Chair, I wanted to then also ask, as always, I have a number of questions, but I think it must raise a concern about the fact that so much is having to be done by the provinces. You are relying on the provinces, and with the exception of two, I would say, probably, you are relying on dysfunctional provinces to actually do the work, to roll out your discussions that you're having at national level, etc. But let me question the support to learners. And perhaps I've misunderstood. I hope that I have. Because it seems that the department is trying to make it as easy as possible to get as high a score as possible. The department has produced exemplars. The department has produced a guideline for teachers. The department has produced indicators of work that it should receive focus in order for the children to be able to score well in the literacy and numeracy tests. Now, if there is good teaching going on, if there is good quality education taking place, the children should be on par with respect to literacy and numeracy. They shouldn't need guidelines on what focus areas they require with respect to the literacy and numeracy test, the ANO test. They should be on par. So I don't understand how you can say that this is an accurate measure of literacy and numeracy in our country and of the level of education in our country when you are providing so many tools to make it, to pass as high a score as possible. Could you please explain that? Thank you.
Chair, thanks. Just to confirm that my document as well went as far as slide 12, but apparently it's just the two of us. I don't know what happened to that. I think I've got several things, I won't say questions, going on in my mind with regard to the whole thing. But I'll then stick to the two questions that you want us to raise, because to me accuracy is very, very important in terms of the data and everything else. As part of the question I want to raise, it's the contradiction wherein, in terms of learner registration, for instance, the department says the appointing service providers to do that and help them in terms of that data. Something which, in my view, the department was supposed to have capacity to handle. Because there's a teacher, there's a principal in the school, you know how you have captured these learners right from the beginning of the year. By now, it's clear who is there. But you still need somebody to come in from outside, help you clean or ensure that that data is accurate. Fine. Perhaps we may not want to argue much on that, but I still have got a belief that the department was supposed to do that within a short space of time, even if it means telephoning almost everybody. But then you say this is a major exercise, and the hope that after you have administered this testing, you'll be able to process it, and this time around we don't need additional capacity. Instead of the department now will be able to administer and process all that kind of activity on its own. I'm still wondering in terms of the capacity here, that in terms of capturing data, you don't have capacity. But you'll have capacity this time around to ensure that you're able to deal with all that result from the test and handle it. You know, to me, I'm not able to find that very reasonable. The other, in terms of the verification test or ANA, you're saying already it's known which schools are going to be part of this verification. Those have been identified. And I would prefer a random selection of this kind of schools based on a particular criteria. If already, beforehand, you have identified these schools, the question is, what was it based on? We know that you have got a lot of difficulties. In some instances, you don't have enough subject advisors, you don't have this or that. So if you want to identify that beforehand, the possibility exists that in terms of verification, you might have designed the system to give you a result that will be better. You know, it's not easy to then say this verification should just give us whatever results, which is a reflection, a true reflection of what happens on the ground. Because if you have designed that, unless if we are told the criterion, but you have ensured that almost everywhere you are able to have this course. But if you had them beforehand, it means they can even prepare themselves in a manner that they are able to produce better results than if you went to any school and then pick on them. I'm not sure what the logistical implications will be if you don't necessarily have them beforehand, but I want us just to try to deal with that share amongst other things. Thanks.
Thank you, the person. And thanks for the presentation. So we have got quite a number of questions around it, but at least we can say that something has been done. My first question, Chairperson, will be on slide number 5. But it's towards the end. I think it's the third one from the bottom, support to learners, where you look at the time frame, Chairperson, that has been put there. It was said the first exemplars were given to the provinces, to the district directors, by the 19th of April. That was the first one. Now we have got the second and the third set available. It's not said whether it has reached the schools or even the district. And when you go back to the first slide, we are left with less than 30 days for these tests to be conducted. And also, in that midst, we're also talking of these pre-ANA revisions and all that. I'm just worried of time, Chairperson. Yes, we might be having those documents that are very good, that are aimed at assisting the school to improve the result, taking from what happened last year. But my worry is, with the time that's given there, are we sure that these are going to reach the school and are going to perform the duties that they came up for? Really, when look at the time, I'm not sure whether that can be achieved, Chairperson. Secondly, Chair, I wonder, as we are saying, we have got cleaning centres in the provinces, we have got warehouses where we need to distribute all these question papers to schools. We know how strict it is usually. It's usually be with metric papers, and I'm not sure with these ones. As to say, looking at the issues of security, how it's done, because at the end, really, there is no point conducting these papers if ever they're going to be leaking the way, you know, in whatever way. As to say, really, I'm sure as to say those printing centres are well secured as. We usually see even the metric papers being secured, though even they sometimes have questions. But with this one, really, I think we need much to be done. But then, Chair, that is not a question. Now, I'm just adding to the question that has been made. The question on slide number 12. The graph on slide number 12, where I also think, Chairperson, can get clarity on the graph. There are a lot of things that. That, oh, yeah,
Ballot is really there that you cannot understand this, to say what is it that those characters that are appearing there, different personalities and whatnot. I think if ever we can be clarified on that one, I can be happy to present. Last year, when we look at the result from last year, we said we are building, want to build and have quality education in the country. Looking at all the graphs indicating the performances of the learners last year, numeracy, and I think numeracy is just this. I think certain by now, we should be reported just to say, from the lessons that we have got, what happened from last year's annual results, these are the programs that have come up with to make sure that we assist even the teachers down there. By now, certain maybe even starting from the foundation phase, we need to be having very much intensive programs to say how are we assisting the teachers, because definitely it means even our teachers are weak in performing some of their duties. Not especially when it comes to numeracy. If ever we can get a picture as today, I know maybe we cannot get from the presentation of Anna, but from the DBE as to say the lessons that have been drawn from these results, what is it that we are learning out of it, and what are the programs that are coming directly from Anna results to help assist the system to perform in our teachers and learners to perform even better. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Member. My concern will be on the guidelines. That the reporting was developed on how to use the results. I think it's going to link up with a question that Uncle Lovemore asked. I'll discuss what was reality last year. When we were in the Free State, at one of the schools, one of the principals did not know the annual results of his school, that's number one. Number two, he did not understand what Anna is intended for, and what should he do about that? That's diagnostic tool. And then at the same time, we discovered that there was no clear intervention plan from the province and districts in terms of analysis and support. Now, when it comes to this guideline you're speaking about, how are we going to ensure that the provinces, districts, and schools know how to use it? I think that's going to be important, because the Honourable Lovemore spoke to district support. How will they know? Then, I don't know what the slice number, but it's the printing, packing, and distribution. According to the slide, that on the 14th or the 9th, that schools will be having the question papers by the writing on the 18th. And my question is like Ambogina's question, security around it. Because remember with the national examinations, it was made very clear to us, like some schools do have safe. And then Western Cape said, we'll keep it. And the principals have to collect the morning of examinations. So how are we going to monitor that process? Because when it comes to security, not all schools have a secure facility. Then I'm not going to speak to service provider. Not satisfied with that, as on Bromakubert puts it. But you want to know whether procurement was done. And then when it comes to the time frames, all marking and moderation mark sheets must be complete by the 26th of September 2012. But now we speak about where the minister will announce will be in the middle of December. But if we look, compare it to the national examinations, the grade 12 examinations, they are within a month, the following month, then the minister announces the results in January, early in January. But the time frame here seems to be too long. Thanks. That's all. My answer, Dr. Pollack.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will start off with the answers of some questions. Some questions we may require to provide in writing, but we'll come to those, and Dr. Polia and Mweli will add. I think I'll start off with the chairperson and raise issues to indicate that one of the things we said is that the ANA is not a high stakes exam, in that it's not there for a promotion purpose. And it can be compared to the grade 12, but not in the sense of a high stakes, because we do not want to create tension and children and parents being put under stress. And as has been indicated, certain principles that we've adopted in order for the purpose of it itself, which is developmental and so forth. So the security that we are that being asked is not the kind of the grade 12. So if a paper does leak, it is a serious issue, but it's not treated in the same manner of criminality that would be in a grade 12. Although we need to look at, we will conduct investigations into irregularities. Like some of the concerns were about where the test is opened earlier in a grade 12, it will be seen as being more serious than in this ANA. But there are security issues that I think Dr. Polia will elaborate on. So, Honorable Chair, if, for example, principals had opened the paper and give it, we would know that the results of that school would have been contaminated. And to then use it in any particular purpose, you've got to use it in the context of what has occurred. And we'd have to look at the merits of that. Also, I think what we faced with is that if you look at the grade 12 level, principles are even violated. Procedures are very fast and strong, you know, people and so forth. And what we have, that kind of discipline, especially in 2011, wasn't there for grades 1 to 6. Because the primary school heads had never been subject to this kind of processes. So what we've brought in now is that in that analysis of some of the weaknesses in 2011, we looked at some of the best practices of the grade 12, and one of the decisions that the Council of Education Ministers did take was that provincial departments would need to place this process under the examination unit. That's in terms of administration. The support in the learners would be a curriculum issue. And some provinces have even gone further than that, two in particular who created, put them under different units where they were dedicated and their strongest people leading that. So to just go to the question about the dysfunctionality, it's true that some of the provinces may be dysfunctional, but the teams that we have for the ANA are basically the best people. They have run other exams in the past. That does not mean that there would not be problems that we will have to address. And so when a province, basically the DD is responsible for the entire ANA, irrespective of what happens on the ground, whether a province is doing its own printing. That's been done on the basis that a province would have offered its services, it needed to meet certain standards, it needed to meet certain time frames, certain prices, and follow procurement procedures that the DDU would follow. And on that basis, we have entered into where the DG has given acceptance to certain of the functions being delegated to the province. So five provinces have basically undertaken this task. Would they believe we are confident? We're not saying that there are no risk in that, but that is where the continuous support and the assistance and departmental teams are working with those provinces to see where there are gaps. Then the DB itself is responsible for the other four provinces grades during the printing, packing, distribution. But there again, we're still working with provincial colleagues to be part of that team. And in the end, it doesn't matter who does what. The buck stops with DB on this, because we also have to reimburse the provinces for those services. Now, to just come back, let me just give you the slide on the... The slide was given of the background of last year's results. The four that we are dealing with is Northern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, and Limpopo. And the other five, Mpumalanga, KZN, Western Cape, Northwest, and Eastern Cape. What did I repeat? Yeah, the five, they are basically, it's like they're running the grade 12 exam. But we are working with them there. Northwest. That's the five. And the four, we are Northern Cape, Gauteng, Western, Gauteng, Free State, and Limpopo. That's the four that we're dealing with, the printing distribution. But it's also teams that are in the provinces. No reason in that they had they came back and said they would refer the DBE to do it. Some of it could be that they put their business plans and the codes were higher than what we had put in our standards in the prices, and therefore we would say, no, we are not prepared to pay for your the ones that you're quoting for. In terms of the, on page 4, the two tables on the maps and numeracy, the average is the blue, which comes from the universal ANA. And the universal ANA, one of the problems was we did not capture all the learners last year, but it gave us some data which you could use and make some assumptions. So the blue bar...
We don't have blue. We don't have blue.
Okay. The dark, I think the one on the left, would be the average performance starting from grade 1 going down. And what it basically says is that at grade 1, learners were performing at 60%, and the trend that it is showing, even though at grade 6 there's a slight improvement, is that there's a decline in performance. So you could come to a conclusion that children enter the system with a particular knowledge base, but they seem to be doing worse off as they progress through the system. So that's like the conclusion we came to for both the math and the math literacy. And that increase in the grade 6, you can find other reasons. Maybe just it should have been a downward trend, maybe the paper was easier and so forth. You could get explanations for that. And then the one on the right and the lighter, which is in color, is in green, is basically the level of performance at level 4, which is at 70% and above. And you'll find that, again, the trend is that you have more learners at 70% and above from grade 1, and it decreases to grade 6. And then this could, if we had, we could probably say if you want to make assumptions that if you take the grade 9, it could be equal to the grade 6 or lower in coming to it. So I hope that helps in that question. Then on the learner registration, I think to explain that the 6.9 million comes from the EMIS SNAP, which was taken in February. EMIS itself is a self-reporting survey. There have been questions about data, but it is basically our official statistics that there could be an overcount, particularly at the grade 1 level. So we've used that, and what has occurred is that we appointed a service provider to do captioning, which is in the same manner we would just do for grade 12. We don't need to register every child, because this is not a high-stakes exam. But the issue of data has been a problem in the sector, with the ghost learners and principals fiddling with the figures because of the training system and so forth. So it was it is an opportunity for us to get as close as possible to the actual population that will write. So the figure of 6.74 million, 6.7 million that's now captured, it basically, when the 14th of December is, the system will be basically closed, will be our population that will write. So if we dished out 6.7 million papers, we should in return get 6.7 million back in terms of the count when we capture results. And there isn't, we need an explanation, a child died or the child has moved from, was sick or something on the day. So we're getting close to where we're eliminating the issue of the ghost learners, and that outstanding amount, which when the verification, when we close, it's likely to be some independent schools that are counted in the 6.9 million who are not there for subsidy purposes, some of the special schools, which will be a small number, and then there are some public schools who basically don't have any of these grades as well, which is we'll have to look at. And that will tell us, that if you look at Caltrans, in February we had a certain figure, and now we've gone higher, and in between that in the February and June, you could have had migration, parents moving to Caltrans. And then in other provinces, there seems to be a decrease with maybe parents moving out. But I think in the end, we're going to get a database now in which we can compare to other databases, which is beyond what the ANA is. But for the ANA purposes, we would have a dedicated population of approximately 6.7 or 6.8 million writing. And when we capture, we need to explain why we didn't capture if we didn't have the marks. Sorry, No, you have to take the wrong, you've got 7 faculties.
Oh,
it's
717.
It's 7, the portfolio class is 717. I think when you not say the population is almost close to that 100%, and if you want to make other assumptions that beyond Anna, is that we can see that the accuracy, we are close to 99.9% of learners there. I think I'll take on that to deal with that. And then to indicate that all procurement procedures were followed, where tender were advertised and people had made applications. We've even had that process externally audited, and the Auditor General were also asked to be part of that process in that regard. So we've had an external external auditor to oversee the process as well. I think then we've dealt with learner registration.
Chair, just to add, in terms of the security, I think what we are basically undertaking in the system is to make sure that in terms of the learner's experience, he does not experience this as a high stakes event. But yet in terms of security, we are making sure that we run them by our examination standards. And then although Mr. Padiachi has mentioned that we would not deal with it by the same high standards that we apply in the case of the NSC. For example, all tests will be sent to schools in sealed bags, which are tamper-proof bags. So Madam Chair, the fact that the tests will get to schools on the 14th, because they are in tamper-proof bags, and what we have put into the procedure is that the sealed bag must be opened in the presence of the invigilators and also in the presence of the first class, so that learners are aware that the bag is sealed and it has not been tampered with prior to the writing day. Now, the challenge we had, and because it's only our second year, to ask for these tests to be delivered on the morning that it is being written may lead to problems. Delivering it for 3 days before may compromise in terms of, you know, tampering, but in terms of the bigger picture, it will ensure that every school receives the correct test with the correct number, and it will allow for principals to check. I think as we progress in terms of the system, we can move to a point where we say that all schools must receive it on the morning. But for this year, just to make sure, given the magnitude, that we allow principals to check and come back to us in terms of that particular matter. Also, after the tests are written, they will be put into a sealed bag and they will be locked in the principal's office until the teachers are ready to mark. In the case of the verification agent, they will administer the test, collect the test, and take that away with them. And then in terms of the issue about how has the sample been selected, it is certainly a random sample. And there was no interference in terms of making sure that we select our best schools. The sample has been selected, but we are aware of the schools that would be part of the verification panel, but the schools have not been informed. The schools will not know that they are part of verification ANA until that morning when an independent agent pitches up at that school to monitor the conduct and the writing of the test and then takes it away. We thought that was important so schools could also, you know, just start training their learning. And also in addition, that if a sample of learners within the school, a sample of 25, that would be selected by the verification agent, and that 25 will only be done after the test has been written on the first day. So we think we possibly are kind of protecting ourselves there from any kind of manipulation. In terms of the issue that is being raised regarding what the kind of support and guidelines and exemplar, are we not doing this to just artificially inflate the scores? Now, what I can indicate there is that one needs to understand that on a day-to-day basis, the assessment that is conducted by the teacher is what learners are afraid with in a way, because the teacher setting the test. But when you have a national test set outside the school, it's international practice that you must provide learners with a clear indication of the scope and the depth of that particular test. Because the point I think one needs to also understand is that you have a syllabus which gets taught. But not all that gets taught gets assessed. And therefore there's a need for an assessment framework or an assessment guideline. Because an assessment task is in fact a sample of what gets taught. So if one looks at systems in the UK, if one looks at the systems in the United States and Australia, assessment guidelines, assessment framework, and some countries they call it an exam syllabus, is provided to all learners to make them aware. Because I think assessment cannot be secretive. We need to assess learners and make them aware of what the specific learning outcomes that they will be assessed. Provision of exemplars, I think it's necessary, simply because teachers are accustomed to setting their task in a particular manner, rightly or wrongly. But when you provide an exemplar, you're giving them a sense of what a good test is. So they use the good test to expose the learners to that practice so that nothing that learners write. Learners should not be taken by surprise in a standardized assessment. And the surprise element is always there when assessment is set outside the school. But I also agree that one should not target just raising up test score. One should focus on teaching and learning more broadly. And I believe that that's the challenge we're sitting with, because the other question that was posed by the Honourable Member is that how is it that a learner passes the grade but fails the test? So that points to the fact that there's a variation in standard between the standardized test and the classroom assessment. And I think Anna is seeking to address that problem precisely, that we provide teachers with exemplars, so teachers get a sense of what the standard is in terms of a national assessment. And we believe that as we progress through the years, it will improve teacher capacity in terms of setting standards that are of the appropriate standard and demand. And also I think one needs to understand that technically speaking, that a learner can pass the grade but fail the test, because to pass the grade, the requirements to pass the grade are separate from just looking at performance in two individual tests. But I think you're correct. These are challenges that as a system we need to deal with, so that standardized tests become the standard and the norm of classroom assessment. In terms of, I think I covered the verification school and the sample. In terms of the exemplars, we've provided the exemplars to the schools, so they have received them, they are on our website, we've given them a complete test, so they have enough material. And provinces have printed these and distributed to schools, but obviously this is an aspect that we are monitoring and making sure that it is done by all provinces. The ministerial announcement, you want to touch on that one, Mr. Bariachi? I think that's it.
Chair, before Mr. Mwili comes in, to indicate on the dates you were speaking about, the quality had indicated that from the test year, end of August, the papers need from the distribution point should be getting to schools. So it will not be on the 14th. The 14th is last day, and we believe that should be for the mopping up where there have been problems. So distribution is about 2 week period to get it to schools. And once we've written from the 18th to the 21st, then the process is that all teachers mark their papers for all their learners. It is one more week, the last week of the third term, in which they need to complete, and that's where we refer to the 26th of September, where they'll complete the mark sheet, the internal moderation at school level, and it's the 28th of September.
Yeah.
Those mark sheets need to be given to the districts for collection to come to the capturing center. So that's the universal honor that will be collected. Then the script that we are looking at for the centralized moderation will be collected, and in the vacation of September, October, the marking will occur at the centralized marking centers. That will then be captured, and then that takes us into October, and we're talking about now we will have 7 million plus the independent in the verification, and the service provider basically for the independent wanted to go to February. But we've cut them down that by the end of November it needed to be completed because of their marking as well as the item analysis. So in terms of the management plan, about 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks from October and November is to wrap up all the collection of the data and the analysis of that. And then we will give that to the minister. And we've on our management plan, it's got the middle of December,
but it's subject to the minister. If the thing that goes smoothly and it's available earlier, then it will be the minister's call to release earlier. If there are hiccups, we'll have to go back to our principal to indicate what the problem is. So we've looked at every issue. We've got other, you know, risk management strategies to deal with if the information cannot be uploaded on the platform. The stories we had last year, we've dealt with those, and there's no excuse about lack of funds or getting the right people to complete the task.
No, thank you very much. Just to start with the last point that was made by Mr. Padayaki, it would be useful really to keep the lower part of the system quite close to the last part of the system as you release the results. I'm therefore suggesting that it might be a good idea to keep the announcement of, because you're signaling on the performance of the DET band in December, and the first week of January, then you give the results of the FET band. So you set the tone for the upper end of the system, so it might be a useful idea to keep them as close as possible. The issue of inequality and education outcomes and learner performance is a challenge worldwide, and the only way you deal with that is to provide as much support as possible. Particularly where your inequalities are more even profoundly manifested than in other areas. Now, honorable members, if you look from the surface and you look at the results of the Western Cape and Gauteng, the impression that you might get is that these are well-off provinces. But if you analyze deep into the results, the inequalities of these well-to-do provinces are even more profound than the inequalities of the rural provinces. I think that the research which was conducted, I'm not sure whether it's HSRC or which institution conducted that research, I think it revealed those inequalities. Even in the performance of government broadly, as you move closer to lower demarcations, the inequalities are even more profound than at regional level and even at national level. But all that we are saying, Honorable Mushwana, is that the only way we're dealing with this in education is to provide as much support as possible. And let me hasten to say at this point in time, from a curriculum point of view, if you ask us as to what is the solution to improve in the provision of quality of education, for us, there are two high-impact interventions. The first one is curriculum coverage, which has revealed, whether you're talking the National Senior Certificate or ANA, schools that cover the first up to the last topic, internationally as well, schools tend to do well. In fact, analysts are saying, and education experts, if we improve curriculum coverage, we can improve our results by 20% overall. The second aspect is teacher accountability and time on task. Those are the two key areas that we have tended to focus on as the basic education sector. And teacher accountability and time on task, it's simple. It's about ensuring that teachers are there at work, but it's also ensuring that teachers are in the classroom teaching and teaching the right subjects in the right way, and also providing the requisite assessment and giving prompt feedback. That's what time on task is about. And if we can succeed in those two, and I'm sure that this sector will be ready to compete internationally quite comfortably. And in terms of time on task, the issues that you're focused on is the restoration of accountability instruments in the system, like your attendance register. People are accounted for that they are at work. The classroom control register, that people are teaching periods that they are expected to teach, and that learners are also there. The learner attendance class register as well. So those are the two areas that we decided to focus on. In terms of support broadly, the basis of support for performance and progression in the system we have developed a what we call the National Strategy for Learner Attainment, NSLA, to cover the grade R up to grade 12. We have delineated roles to be played by a national department like DBE, roles to be played at provincial level, roles to be played at district level, roles to be played at school level, up to even classroom level. And we are saying if we can hold all those role players accountable, for us that is a comprehensive accountability instrument that we can use to improve the sector. And therefore, we've premised the implementation of the literacy and the numeracy plan on this strategy. We have also premised the implementation of the ECD plan on this strategy. We've also premised the implementation of the math, science, and technology plan on this strategy. And what we are saying is that those are the base documents for all teachers to be able to do their work. What are the lessons learned from the last
dialogue? Can we, are we allowed to interview when there are important things being thrown out by the person? Yes. I think someone is mentioning two very important variables. The art of curriculum coverage and teachers. I will just want to know what then are the impediments? What are you telling, what is preventing the department from implementing just those two variables? Because they're very important. I agree.
Now, what we have done, we've developed a curriculum coverage monitoring tool for principals to implement, and we've introduced that this year. And we've made it mandatory for all schools. I'm therefore saying to honorable members that you visit schools, you might also help as part of your oversight work to check whether these instruments that we developed and made mandatory for all schools are indeed being implemented. That's the first one. The second one, we are saying, schools must have accountability instrument. The attendance register for all employees, teachers and support staff must be signed, monitored, analyzed, and controlled on regular basis. The classroom or period control register must also be administered and controlled. The learner attendance register must also be controlled on regular basis. I know that you've been teachers before. You know that we used to, monitor attendance through these instruments. The fact is, accountability culture had collapsed in the system. And because of that, we are reaping the consequences of that in a very big way, and it's going to take some time for us to restore accountability in the system. So that's what we have done. In addition to that, we have gone out to provinces, all the 9 provinces, reflecting on the importance of these interventions and that they must happen quite rapidly so that we resuscitate the performance of the system. The Minister and the Deputy Minister, in terms of lessons learned from the last ANA, the Minister and the Deputy Minister have gone out to provinces to meet with principals, district officials, going out to schools, checking whether teachers and schools have analyzed the results of 2011 ANA. And in the majority of cases, they found that that was not done. The subsequent follow-up visit then revealed something different, that indeed teachers and principals had started to analyze the results of the 2011 ANA, and they have developed improvement plans based on the outcomes of the findings of the 2011 ANA. And which is what we are doing as well. I thought I must just touch on those. Two main points, but just to say that whilst I acknowledge and respect the view expressed by honorable members in terms of the competency of teachers, the summit results of 2011, I think it was for grade 6, revealed something different. The summit results indicate that teacher competency in the country performs favorably well compared to elsewhere in the world. We perform above a mid score of 500. The Western Cape is highest at about 700 mid score. Which means that if you take those results, teacher competency could be an issue, but it's not a big problem. Our big problem is around curriculum coverage, time on task, and teacher accountability. if we talk about accountability, it's not only about schools, it's accountability across the entire system. We need to reevaluate accountability in the entire system, right from DBE up to the classroom level. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm not taking any longer questions because we have to go on with the regulation. I'll just add. Thank you. I'm going to round up.
There was one which was not answered.
The one which was.
Yes.
I want to say things that
parents,
we get in writing.
Parent involvement.
Parent involvement.
Sorry. I think that will be important, not in writing.
Oh, just quickly to say, the way parents are involved is through the QLTC activities, that's one. Two, through the advocacy program that we've started to unfold involving SGBs, radio programs where we encourage parents to supervise learners in going through some of the tasks that are provided in the workbooks in preparation for ANA and so on.
Yes, thank you very much. But we are specific. The reality is the bulk of our parents can't read and write, yet they need to be involved in the education of their parents. I know it's not an education matter only. What I want to know is, are there any efforts to bring in those parents who whose ability to follow up on their children's classroom work is limited, or is it just left out, you know?
No, thanks. There are two ways. One is through Karikude, and Karikude is breaking its own counts. We've gone over the 50% mark that was set for 2014. So we're making some progress in terms of empowering parents to be able to participate in the education of their children. But I must also say there are wonderful initiatives, particularly from KZN, where there's a program focusing on an SGBs, opening it up to the broader parent body to get them involved in assisting learners with homeworks and other things. But we're just observing what's happening there with a view of replicating that to the other 8 provinces. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for that. I think when it comes to that 97%, that was captured. And you see there was a 3% that's not captured. And it could be the learners that are severely disabled. When it comes to that, give us a breakdown of that 3%. You know, it's not really a good in our minds. Then when it comes to the adaptation to our deaf and blind learners. Remember, members, we were Northwest, and we were in Mpumalanga on hearings. And they had challenges. Papers arrived late. Schools had to adapt it for these learners. So I think that's going to be important. When it comes to our QLTC, the report that speaks about QLTC, we must see that it is functional on the ground. Then when it comes to accountability, we are going to keep you accountable to the guidelines you gave us today. And then I think when it comes to subcommittee members, even myself, the cost of having service providers in comparison to capacity. And what you said, there was a lack. People talk about a lack of capacity. But Ms. Maweli said that our teachers are competent. And he spoke, you know, to where we are in the world, the grade that we're on. But I think the committee, we have to start about that question on the service provider. Then when it comes to questions, I'm sure there's many members that still have questions. You can drop your questions, send it through Lowell, and we'll be giving it to the department. And I must say, when it comes to Karakure, Mr. Mawele, and the department, everyone reckons, even when it's professionally, even when it comes to intellectuals, That is one of the best programs of our department, but they say keep so quiet about it. We don't speak about it. So start speaking about that. Thank you. I'll excuse you, Dr. Pollack, because I believe you have to go to KwaZulu-Natal. Let us go over to Mr. Paraki, the regulation. Out of the swing. All right. You just see what the time? So just take out a check of plan. I'll give you till half 11.
Yeah, I'll try to run as fast as possible.
Yes.
Just to check whether you've received the handouts and the regulations.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's very thick. So if we say explain. Yes. I'm not, that's not a slide. The regulations received are very thick. We're still reading through them.
Okay.
Therefore, we request it. Just get the outline. Thank you.
Okay. President and honorable members, thank you very much. This presentation, as you correctly indicated, is on regulations for the National Curriculum Statement for grade R to grade 12. I can indicate, Chairperson, that you'll probably be getting another set of regulations based on the assessment. Probably not this year, next year. So this one is purely based on the curriculum that we are implementing, which was introduced in 2008. I can say that we have been implementing this curriculum based on the requisite legislation and the relevant provision of the Constitution, but without requisite regulations. And we want to just fulfill or plug on that gap of the absence of regulations so that we are in full compliance with what is expected of us. The presentation will briefly cover the purpose, the background, the rationale for the regulations and how they are put together. Well, in terms of the purpose is really to argue the rationale for that the curriculum cannot be successfully compliant if we have not provided the requisite regulations. And in terms of the background, Chairperson, what we are saying is that we need to ensure that the National Curriculum Statement for Grade R to 12, which is applicable to public schools and those independent schools offering the curriculum, have regulations that cover the curriculum as well as the National Senior Certificate. As I said, this presentation will focus on the curriculum and probably later on we'll come back to you to talk to the qualification. Well, in terms of the need for the regulations, the Minister is accorded powers provided for in terms of the requisite legislation and the policy, and until 2001 all policy issues regarding curriculum assessment were approved in terms of Section 3, Subsection 4L of the National Education Policy Act of 1996. In 2001, the Constitutional Court ruled that the policy alone is not adequate. This was in a case of Harris. This is the Department of Education regarding the school age requirements. And the South African Schools Act was then amended to make provision for Section 6A, where it indicates that the minister may determine outcomes and standards and procedure and processes of assessment to be applicable to all schools. The minister is further empowered in terms of Section 61 of the South African Schools Act to translate policy into regulations. And the current policy must be approved in terms of both Section 3, Subsection 4L of the National Education Policy Act and 6A of the South African Schools Act. Both the Senior Certificate and National Senior Certificate have a combined set of curriculum and assessment regulations. The department's legal team, in the case involving BCVO, which is the Beweging vir Preselijke Onderwijs, and the Department of Basic Education recommended that curriculum and assessment should rather be separate. In other words, we need to have a separate set of regulations. That's why I'm saying this set of regulations anchors the curriculum. The next set that we're going to bring will focus on assessment. Now, there are three documents underpinning the National Curriculum Statement for Grade R to Grade 12. The first document is about the national policy pertaining to the program and promotion requirements for the NSE. And the second document is the National Protocol for Assessment for Grade R to Grade 12. And we'll explain this in the course of the presentation. And the third important document also is the Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement for all subjects. In terms of the composition, the scope and application, the regulations apply to all public schools and those independent schools offering the NCS grade R to grade 12, and this must be read in conjunction with the three sets of the NCS grade R to grade 12 documents that we've just referred to. And in terms of definition, the definition is consistent with the definition provided for in the Act as indicated earlier on. So that's the same definition that we're using in the regulation. The duration of the various phases in the NCS is for grade 1 to grade 9, which is compulsory education in terms of the South African Schools Act. And then the National Senior Certificate, which is a 3-year qualification, stretches from grade 10 to grade 12, which is not compulsory and has been provided for in terms of the Constitution. The program requirements for grade R to grade 12, here we provide for the number and composition of subjects specified for each grade in the policy document, as well as the minimum subject content stipulated in Chapter 2 and 3 of the CAPS documents. And the promotion requirements, here we provide for minimum pass requirements specified in the policy. We are also dealing with issues of progression, that at least progression must be observed once in the phase, and the progression must not be used for gatekeeping purposes in the phase. And the learner progression must receive the relevant and the requisite support. And we're also dealing with school-based assessment. We're saying we're providing a ratio for internal and external assessment. A compilation of school-based assessment and practical assessment task marks. We are also making a provision for the number of formal tasks to be completed as specified in the protocol and chapter 4 of the CAF documents. In respect of the end of the year exams, we are saying we provide for internally set, marked and moderated in terms of the protocol and chapter 4 of the CAPS documents. Those learners who are not available to sit for the examinations, there's provision for valid and non-valid reasons in terms of the protocol. In terms of the valid reasons, marks will be recalculated in terms of the subjects already written plus the school-based assessments that are completed. In respect of the reasons that are deemed to be not valid, the learner will not be resulted because of those stipulated reasons that are provided also in the regulations. The management of school assessment records, this section provides for the compilation, safekeeping, and transfer of records as specified in the protocol. And then dealing with examination irregularities, this section then provides for dealing with irregularities such as dishonesty during exams as provided for in the protocol and the conduct of the National Senior Certificate Examination documents. And recording and reporting of learner performance, we use the 7-point scale as stipulated in the policy. And then regarding additional subjects, The information provided there is that we may offer more than the 7 subjects in terms of the National Senior Certificate subjects, provided it, this complies with the 3-year duration and the school-based assessment requirements. In other words, this subject must start from grade 10 and not be introduced later in the qualification. Recognition of subjects from other approved assessment bodies. What we are saying in terms of these regulations is that there's a procedure regarding the development to be followed by the applicant, which is usually done by the assessment bodies. We provide for that procedure in the regulations. And we are saying the assessment body, and this must be developed by an accredited assessment body, and must be assessed and examined by the assessment body, and the applicant is responsible for all development and assessment costs incurred. And this is subject to approval by the minister. And changing of subjects in grades 10 to 12, two subjects can be changed in grade 12 and 11, and two in grade 12, but at the moment we're providing only for one. But in the regulations, we accommodate two, so that we increase as a result of the request from a request that is increasing in the system, we're providing for two in grade 12. And we are saying this is subject to the approval of the HOD, a letter of motivation from the school, also a letter from the teacher, and making a commitment that the learner will get the requisite support. And those will form the basis for consideration. In terms of concessions, what are the concessions provided in the regulations for deaf and language impairment? We are saying the offering can be provided for one official language, provided another approved subject is offered in the place of the one official language not offered. For those learners who have difficulties of calculations, which we call dyscalculia, are exempted from offering of mathematics and mathematical literacy, provided another approved subject is offered in the place of mathematics and mathematical literacy. In terms of the immigrant candidates, we are saying they may offer only one official language, provided another approved subject is offered in the place of one official language that is not offered. Now, in respect of the national curriculum national senior certificate with endorsement for learners experiencing barriers to learning, we are saying learners in special schools or in the mainstream but identified for special schools may offer 5 instead of 7 subjects to be provided for. One proviso, that the certificate, in terms of the certificate, the issuing of the national senior certificate is endorsed by UMALUS. And in terms of the time allocation there, we are saying from grade R to grade 1 is 23 hours, and in terms of grade 2 to grade 3 is 25 hours, grade 4 to grade 12 is 27.5 hours. The promulgation there is in terms of Section 61C and D of the South African Schools Act. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, sir. Any questions from the members? We start with Pastor Ganyaho. And then it's Honorable Ganyaho, Honorable Mishwana, Honorable Mishwana, Honorable Makubela, and then Honorable Dina. Thank you. Let's start in that order. Honorable Ganyaho. All right. I'd limit you to 2 again, excuse me. Because I think you want to get to the catch-up plan too. Or else we'll never get to the catch-up plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if you look
get, you know, these are not numbers, but the one on composition, the slide on composition. My interest is in the PAT. Is it a practical assessment? What is it? Practical assessment task. What is it? Practical assessment task. In other words, technicalized schools. Now, this is where I'm interested in. How is it done? Because the committee will remember, at one stage, we visited a school where the main complaint was the absence of workshops. They only learn in the classroom. The tools are there, but there are no workshops. Now, how do you allocate marks, practical marks, for such students? Is it just because he's good in theory, he will also be good in practical, or what's happening? Now, I know you can't give a ready answer, but you know, I'm just awakening you to this thing so that at least some follow-ups are made or revisions are made that technical schools that have these problems are really provided with the necessary, you know, equipment that they will need, so that when we see this mark, we know it is a new mark. Because presently those marks are not true marks. Because if there is no workshop, how do you give marks? Because it means the person has not done any practical work. So I'm just bringing your attention to that. I mean, not give me an answer. I don't necessarily have to get an answer, but, you know, this committee did go to a school where the school complains about, you know, workshops. The food are poured in there. You get machines and everything. You only look at those machines and put them in the storeroom and go on. At the end of the year, you keep marks. No, we can't accept that.
The next member, I think, Andrew van Yahoo, you carry and can they go on the Shekho?
Yes. Remember that.
Ilan Paltau.
Yes.
And you look at the teacher as a family.
I am a teacher. And a good one for the
minute. I'm done with the inspector. Thank you very much. Chairperson, I have one question. And it's on composition, specifically on concessions. You speak of dyscalculia, and you exempt them from certain subjects. But I also know of dyslexia. They must be exempted from all the subjects, because they cannot read, they cannot write, and nobody is saying anything about them. But the challenge is that a dyslexia, being a human being, will grow up to our age, or to an age where they must work and get married, for that matter. Yet, they won't have a single certificate in the world because of that condition. Where do you fit them? Because it's like we don't talk about them, but they exist. Certainly, we have dyslexia in this, I know one. Thank you.
I think with that question, there are different types. Self-fit in the worst, because you can be very bright if you're dyslexic.
Thank you, Chair. My question is on additional subjects. If you look at the subject, my question is the Department of the view of revisiting the subjects that are offered for examination to classify them as a non, some of them too as non-examination subjects while they are taught at school. Because you take like a subject like life orientation, for instance. The student gets an A in that subject, inflating her results or his results. But universities, because life orientation is not considered for entrance at the university. What is the use, therefore, of classifying life orientation as an exemption subject that is not considered for entering to a university? I would argue that, yes, have life orientation but as a subject, but classify it or declassify it as a non-examination subject. Would you do something with that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, during one of the presentations at the Umalusi conference, it was indicated, quite shockingly, that FIPS had not been quality assured. by Uma Lucy. In fact, the lady who indicated that said that she had, or Uma Lucy had encouraged the Department of Basic Education not to implement CAPS because it had not been quality assured. The Department of Basic Education insisted, I'm told, on going ahead, and at the beginning of this year, or at the time of the Uma Lucy conference, which I think was in May, roundabout, they were busy with grade R, with the quality assurance of grade R, and they would work their way up. Now, how can you regulate, how can you gazette for a non-quality assured curriculum? How can you actually put out regulations and gazette for a non-quality assured curriculum? That's my first question. So I just wanted to ask a question of clarity. It's not a question as such, but promotion requirements may progress once in a phase. My understanding is that you may fail once in a phase. How can you only progress once in a phase? I'm sure that must have been just an error. And then, Chair, I don't know the answer to this, but with respect to changing of subjects, one of the primary reasons I would think for somebody to change a subject in grade 11 would be through some encouragement, in fact, by the teacher and the principals, the very people who have to write a letter to say that they're going to support the learner to ensure that the school gets better results in grade 12. So, for instance, in maths, that they might want to change maths literacy. What sort of checks and balances, I mean, how do you actually prevent that from happening, that changes are not strongly encouraged by the teacher or by the principal in order to improve the National Senior Certificate results? Thank you, Jay.
Chair, thanks for your kindness. I do not think I have a question, but let me read to the other will not relate to the actual content per se in terms of the LSC and so on. It will relate to the cases. I'm just worried, Chair, mostly we have the act, and it's only when most of the things get to be raised by the court that will happen to comply in terms of developing regulations and so on. Why is it that when in the department they've got legal section that help in the development or coming up with these acts, and we know that the provision for further development of regulations in that regard, and you wait until the courts tell you what should have been provided for? And if there's no court cases, in most cases we are not able to proactively come up with such regulations. That's one. But the second will relate to those that conduct or carry out the curriculum outside of the formal institutions, say public schools and so on. You find parents teaching their own kids at home, you know. I'm looking at changing the two subjects in grade 11 or and so on or in 10. How does that kid change the subject and get all the motivation to say I'm changing from this or that, and you still have, because there's no principal there or any other, you don't know how they actually handling it. But I'm just really interested in how that whole process and this protocol and all that affect kids who are in that environment. I just hope I'm making some sense and clarity will be given in the process. Thanks.
Somebody has a problem with this.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be short. My first one to question would be on of accommodation on the case of DCVO and the department where you agree that you are going to supervise the curriculum and assessment. Are you still going to do that? No, I'm worried really, Chairperson, because in no way where I think of a curriculum being separated from assessment to say we should have two separate regulations on that. Whenever we talk curriculum, assessment is always part of it. It's within the assessment. I see no point really why or the pressures of the course and whatever. Sometimes such pressures are going to make her take decisions that will regret at the end. But if ever I can be convinced otherwise, let's say, how really did you reach that decision and to say those two are going to be separated? It doesn't make that much of a sense to me. Secondly, Chairperson, it has been touched on the progress. That is, you should not repeat a grade at least once in a phase. And I think it is accompanied by a clause that is to say once a learner progress without without getting all the requirements for that certain grade, the child must be sort of assisted and supported in the next grade. Mm. Yes, it is there on paper, but in the real sense, that will not happen. And I think that is a great outcry to all the teachers as we go out there to say, that is the policy that is there. Learners are passing just because they have to progress in a certain phase just because of the rule that is there by the department. My question, Chair, I might not get an answer here, but it's a challenge just to say, really, how best can we make use of this? Or can it be reviewed somehow? Because it means we'll always get these learners, some of these learners that are just pushed. And I'm not sure whether the teachers are not well capacitated really to say, in the next grade, how do you go back and make sure that you recap on what that specific learner did not acquire in the previous grade. And it's a challenge. I hope I'm talking to the people I work with this day in and day out, they understand too, from where I'm coming from. It is a challenge, really, and I think it contributes a lot to the high failure rate, most specifically when it comes to grade 12, and even the dropout rate, really, because if the child does not perform well, really, that child will feel not welcome at school, and it does contribute to the dropout rate out there. I think we need to, the department needs to revisit that. That I don't know how, but really it does affect the learning out there. Chairperson, no, it's not a question, Frontier. Yeah, I concern this one around the issue of languages. Yes, there are two. The learner must make sure that for the NCS, at least the learner has got two languages in the certificate. But again, how do you make sure that we don't kill, let me be specific, most of the African languages? I'll make an example. A school where English is the medium of is the main language, or the home language, let me say so. And you know now, our learners who can go to whatever school, and you find that a bulk of learners there are African, but most of our schools, we don't have African languages being offered. The child takes English, then I know we say parents are going to say there is a governing body and whatever, but I'm trying to be realistic here. You find that the second language will be African, and throughout the life of that land, the African languages have been killed. It's not the African. I don't know how can we manage the issue of languages, really, as to say we don't stick to these two. Maybe so that we open up for African languages. Otherwise, we are fighting some of the schools and quite a number of them where African languages are being killed. It's not offered at all. Lastly, Chair, the concern, the very last one, is on school-based assessment. Maybe I needed to link it with the first question that I came up with. When it comes to school-based assessment, how best can we make sure that assessment is being done? That is where we really rely to see or as you say, are we getting quality out of our education? And, you know, but I think that is an area that is not well managed. I don't know, most of the time our teachers are on the last receiving end. You train all the officials, but for the teacher in the classroom to receive what needs to be received is always questionable. And we always find that really the assessment done at school this much should be desired. Up and maybe with the introductions of Anna and I'm sorry to say what Honorable Kanyafa said. There is no plural of Anna. There is no Anna and the like. Maybe we are trying to correct that. But really, the school-based assessment, I think, is still the center of our teaching. And it's not well managed, really. What is it that you can say around FBAs?
Thanks a lot.
Just on this one.
Yes.
There's a ratio which is said between the internal and external assessment on school base. What is it? Just to decide for going into the bigger document.
Thank you for that. I'd like to know, you know, question on the constitutions. Is that concession or endorsement only for learners with special needs? Just to answer that question. And then often it comes to the assessment. Because many times at school, learners are promoted. And once they are promoted, later on, they are taken back to a lower standard. So that is linked to assessment. That are on what Nina's speaking about, because we do have it within schools. Well, I know about such schools in my own constituency, where it is done. And then when it comes to mother tongue, how did you accommodate a feeling that teaching mother tongue enhances achievement in these regulations? Because we were going to see a conference, and mother tongue was brought up quite a number of times, and that learners achieve, you know, best when things are done in mother tongue. Thank you. Ms. Parachi first, before you give over. Ms. Willie.
Mr. Parayaki, Chairperson, honorable members, I should have indicated that I have Dr. Grill with me, who's an old bureaucrat in the system. He's lived through many administrations, and he's providing technical support in the department. I'm going to request him first to deal with the most difficult so that I'm left with the easiest. But my sense is that all of them are difficult.
Thanks a lot. Mr. Creel, Dr. Creel, or Professor Creel? Oh, Dr. Louis Creel?
Honorable Chairperson, just Louis Creel. I'm not sure what are the difficult ones. The composition of the PAT is regarded as part of the external assessment, and we are aware of schools doing that. We tried also in the regulations to specify for subjects that there must be the minimum requirements. You see, we can specify, but as the honorable member said, they can store EB, but provinces are responsible for the moderation. That is regarded as part of the external examination. So it is set externally, marked internally, but the moderation is externally done. The concessions, the scalcalia is there, aphasia is there. We group them for slot purposes on a language. There are many more. Sometimes it happens that the learner will come with a disability that's not covered, and then we leave it to the minister's discretion. If that if it is regarded as a valid going through the processes of evaluation. We had, for example, a learner that fell from a horse just before the exam and was paralyzed to a certain extent. And then the minister gave the donor a concession for the subjects not written or written. So you see, we cannot take the call, but the scalcula and aphasia is there since the senior certificate days, and it was carried over, but we put it under a category of language impairment. There may be more. So it is covered, and it is listed in the policy. Clearly listed. Yeah, it is part of the policy. I can give you also the policy section there if you need it. Visiting non-examined adult subjects, documentation, that I leave to Mr. Already. I want to come to the Umalusi one. Umalusi, it was a parliamentary question. When we asked them, I couldn't find who said that, because the department requested Umalusi here in 2010, immediately with the developer. Remember, Umalusi, you are the quality council, you must evaluate. And we identified the number of subjects. They said to us they cannot do all the gaps, and we decided that we will give them the key, the high enrollment subjects, and all the official languages. Umalusi was part right from the beginning. They were on all the committees. In fact, they also part of the public comment, and they commented on all caps and policy documents. Just a week back, we received from Umalusi, we must give them more time. They're still busy doing it, going through in detail the subject. So where that news come from that they were not informed, they were informed by the DG, formally requested the DG, listed all the subjects. The subjects were delivered to them on CD, they have to quality assure it. They're still busy with the key subject, and that is now since 2010 that we deliver it to them.
Can I just confirm then? You say they're still busy with the key subject, so you will be gazetting the curriculum, but it actually hasn't been quality assured yet. Is that correct?
No, it was quality assured by them because they were part of the structures. They did it. They're going now in more detail and looking at researching subjects, how we can improve the subject. The emphasis is now on that. I don't think they have any doubt about the quality of the subject because they were part of the public comment process and they were part of all the committees. I can give you the names of the policy people who assisted there. I'm not sure who assisted with the subject, but who assisted me with the policy part. The homeschooling is a very difficult category. We regarded them as part-timers. They must do the SPA and they must, number one, register with the department of that specific provincial department and the assessment body. They must be accredited to an assessment body. Now, in the past, I think until last year, the ERCO, the Afrikaans version of what they did BBO before they were now their registration cancelled by Umalusi, they took care of most of the homeschoolers, seeing that they do the SPA, and when it comes to changing of subjects, they cannot change. Remember, it must go through the head of the assessment of the department, must approve it. Although there's no principle, it will be done on behalf of the assessment body, like IB is sometimes doing it, sending us through that they want to change, for instance, subjects. So there is a contract. The problem is there's vacancy now at this stage. There is upcoming assessment body, if it's going to be accredited by Umalusi, if not. The department is also busy developing a policy for homeschoolers that we can regard them as a separate group there. The question on separation of curriculum assessment, there was always a regulation, but it covered the National Senior Certificate Examination. It covers aspects like, right from the beginning, with the learner, where must the learner register for exams, how many subjects, there's a date in September of each year they must register. Then how learners are, examiners are appointed, an 18-month cycle, and then go straight through the whole process of chief invigilators, irregularities, right up till the end. the computer side. Now, we try to accommodate the curriculum part with that. And that is where the problem was, that curriculum was actually lost focus between all these other regulations. It made it very clumsy. And that is why we separated. So, in fact, that is the oldest regulations that we have, the examination. What is now coming is not a new one, it is a revised one because we cleaned and we took out the curriculum parts. There will be two sets. We have regulations now to cover up till 2030. But then we have to amend it again, slight amendments to make to change now from the structure statements to the caps. So those for 2040. So there will be, you can't agree it now because you still have two exams in terms of current or say the old curricular statements 10 to 12. So it's actually not assessment in per se, but it is the administration of the senior. Assessment is duly covered in this regulation, the protocol on assessment. But mainly for grades 10 and 11, there was always a vacancy. We always emphasized the grade 12. What happened, for instance, if a learner has a valid reason, couldn't complete it? There was nothing. Now there's something in place that the learner, if the learner didn't do, for instance, the SPA, we will give the learner additional time. And then if it's not still there, then it can be regarded, say, as a non-valid reason. But yes, the learners are now covered for all grades. The official languages, the current policy and regulations make for grades 10 to 12, a learner may offer four languages of the seven subjects, maybe languages. The problem is lower down to put in a third language because of the time, but as I understand it, this is a thing that is currently, but he's looking at how can we accommodate, especially in the GET phase. GET, no problem, it's the GET phase to bring in a third language within that restricted time. Progression, that is a difficult one. I understand that is a problem. Also, the comments that we receive is on this progression that they cannot stay longer in the phase. You have that problem. That limits our progress. We try to cover it that there must be support for it. Now, this policy is coming since 1998. The culprit here is grade 11. There it is the learner that suffers. I have experienced that to go to the minister, ask to enforce this, of a province that refused, and Mr. Rivers was there that assisted, where they kept the learner 4 years in grade 11. 4 years. And the parent came to us and complained, he said, but what is going to happen after this letter? So you see, that is a gatekeeping for that idea. Now, I can see lower down, we have to do something, but grade 11 is really a problematic area where they keep them, they don't want them to be poor. We had a lady years back, in the Eastern Cape, a mother phoned and said that her child is now 21. She's also, and we had problems with Eastern Cape. Eventually, they put the learner here by March in grade 12. She passed that year, she got the grade 12. The mother phoned and said she got a C, that was still the senior, she got a qualification. So there are good parts of it, but I know the lower down we have to look at that one, because it is abused to some extent. The last one, Mr. Mwili, that I'm going to try is the endorsement. Endorsement certificate. It's a national senior certificate with endorsement. Now, a learner, it is only for learners in special schools. They complain they cannot do the seven subjects. So we introduced them. Now, we said there are two categories. Those are in special schools, but you have learners in the mainstream, but they are classified to go to other seven refuse to take them to a special group, they keep them in the mainstream. Now, the learner can opt right from the beginning, I'm going for five subjects. And at the end, do the five subjects and with a proviso that later on, that learner can add and do number six and seven. All the learner can say, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going for the seven subjects. But when it comes to exam and that learner passed, only part, then we use the promotion requirement on that. You opted for the pairs, you couldn't make it. The bar was maybe too high, and then we use the promotion. But it, both sides, you can go for seven subjects and examine in five, or go for five right from the beginning. But it's only for that limited group.
Thank you, sir. The mother tongue provision is still catered for in the regulations. What is mandatory is that foundation phase has got to be mother tongue. But provinces have the leverage of even taking it up to grade 6. I remember at some point Limpopo did that. I'm not sure whether they are still doing it. But what is mandatory is that foundation phase must be in mother tongue. The real challenge is not providing instruction in mother tongue. The real challenge is to convince parents and the general public that foundation education in the foundation phase has got to be in mother tongue. Especially your emerging middle class parents who are starting to move away from that because getting instruction in English is part of being associated with being full compliant with status of being a middle class. So I'm sure it's an area where we'll require honorable members to help us in. To really try and emphasize the importance of mother tongue instruction. Some of the challenges that we are dealing with in later grades are cumulative gaps that emerge from the foundation phase, where the learners missed a sound mother tongue instruction in the foundation phase. I think the research is quite in abundance in this regard, but still, people have the view that if your learner speaks English, then you are fine. So it affords you status. The issue of concession is not only limited to cases that are stated as Dr. Krill indicated. There are incidental cases that are subjected to a test, and the minister is advised to consider them. And in the majority of cases, they've been favorably considered by the minister. Honorable Dina, the issue of school-based assessment is a problem. It's a serious problem in South Africa linked to meeting the imperatives of providing quality education. As correctly pointed out by Dr. Folia earlier on, part of what we do, Honorable Lovemore, with exemplar question papers is to strengthen school-based assessment. National and international studies have indicated quite conclusively our school-based assessment is pathetically weak. It can't take us anywhere. Our learners do very well in your school-based assessment. When you subject them to ANA, they perform terribly poorly. You subject them to SUBNEC, the same. You subject them to PAIL, the same. You subject them to TIMSS, the same. It means there's something fundamentally wrong with our school-based assessment. That's why we are saying your assessment in the classroom must model ANA, must model international studies like TIMSS, must model international studies like PELS and others, so that you improve your assessment, so that it's in keeping with international and national standards. So that's the rationale really around these studies. The issue of African languages is a big one. We can't run away from it any longer. Come next year, indigenous African languages will be introduced and will be catered for in schools. We are starting from the foundation phase next year, 2030. We wanted to introduce this year. Council of Education Ministers and HEDCOM said prepare the system for 2012 for implementation in 2013. We have to promote the uptake, the publishing of African indigenous languages. So it's an issue that we are taking on from next year, 2013. We are going to have a workshop on the 27th and 28th to indicate our state of readiness for the implementation of this next year. We know that there are impediments, but we are ready to take on those impediments. The issue of, I think the grill, it's just for admin purposes. Curriculum implementation and assessment in the classroom is integrated. It's just for admin purposes, so don't be worried about that. What's going to happen in the classroom would be fully integrated. This is one of the implications in terms of teaching and learning in the classroom. So So that I can assure you about. And then the... I think Dr. Grill also spoke to the president to the issue of the policy providing that Elena must be kept only once in a phase. And then the views of honorable members are saying, in practice, it's a problem. I agree again that it is a problem. You know, we are trying to get the policy to respond to a myriad of inefficiencies in the system. If the curriculum is covered properly, if we implement SIAS, the screening, identification, and assessment and support program, then learners with barriers to learning will be identified early in the system, like Gauteng and the Western Cape are doing. All the foundation-based learners are subjected to SIAS, to identify those barriers to learning, to support them from the foundation phase, including grade R. But also ensuring that we implement curriculum differentiation. All teachers who were trained as teachers should have been trained on curriculum differentiation. How do you deal with learners who are partially impaired in a classroom? We were trained how to deal with those learners. And that is not happening anymore in the system. So we are getting it back. We are getting it back so that it helps to provide the requisite support for these learners. And then revisiting the issue of waiting for courts to tell us about what we should have done. Honorable Makubela, and unfortunately, it does happen. And I can only concede that it shows that we need to sharpen our strategic capability. But some of these things are tested in courts, isn't it? Until it becomes too obvious to us, and then it's a problem with us. Strategic capability, but some of them have to be tested in court so that we review them. Reviewing our offerings so that some of them are for non-examination purposes. LO is provided as a non-external assessment subject. We are looking at it. There are demands. We can't resist these demands anymore. They are insisting that LO must be subjected to external assessment as well. As to the rationale for that, I don't know. You know, Honorable Chairperson, I'm saying this with the greatest respect. When the rest of the world is moving away from external assessment to school-based assessment, South Africa, we are converging towards external assessment in a big way. Maybe because our school-based assessment is weak. But if our school-based assessment is weak, we need to deal with our school-based assessment. Because external assessment does not necessarily answer the questions that we have about school-based assessment. But until then, maybe these demands are legitimate. And then, Honorable Kanyago, I take the point that you have made. We don't have to be creative to the extent of even creating practical assessment. If that happens, then it's a serious misdemeanor in the system, and it has to be dealt with. And the recapitalization of technical high schools should actually provide for this need to make sure that the workshops that are needed by schools are indeed brought up to speed and provide for this need. Chair, thank you very much.
Mr. Moyle has just assured us that the issue of indigenous languages is well catered for and that preparations are in place. I just want him to assure us what preparations are those. Are we talking of books? Are they there? Teachers being, What are the preparations that Mr. Moyle is talking about? And we are towards the end of the year now looking for the implementation for the roll out of this in January. So if we can be assured.
Thanks for that. And I'm sure the Honourable Banshana thought of this question too. Because I saw him listening to and smiling when Honourable Gina asked the question. Just speak briefly to it, and then you have another meeting on it, because we should have a meeting on that one. Thank you.
Correct. Chair, then, that was what is there now is the provision of the ratio, internal versus the external one on the school basis.
Yeah. No, no, thank you, Chair. I can see Dr. Grill just checking the policy. I know that it's a ratio of 75:25. Yeah. And I think he'll just provide details of that in terms of the ratio, Honorable Makube. I would really like to respond to this question confidently the issues of state of readiness to promote the introduction of indigenous African languages in school from next year. I want the HEDCOM workshop to pronounce itself on it, and then after that, CEM. But for instance, the issue of the time allocated for teaching and learning was an issue in order to accommodate that. The second issue was to provide clarity in respect of our policy in the, particularly in GET, where we make provision only for two languages there, from a policy perspective. The other issue relates to the resources that are needed, including your personnel, teachers, as warm bodies to provide for this. And I can only confidently answer this question and say we are ready as a system. Once we have gone through WebEx and then HEDCOM, and once CEM has rectified the decisions of HEDCOM. But for now, we are going to the HEDCOM workshop to present the report on the state of readiness per province. There are provinces that are ready than others. So we'll be presenting that to HEDCOM, and I wouldn't like to preempt the decisions of that meeting. But what I can assure the committee is that we are implementing 2013, and we should be ready to implement in 2013.
Let's stop there. Then it comes to the state of readiness for the introduction of indigenous languages. I think we'll get back to again on that, that we can hear what is really happening. I think it will be important for our committee just to read through the regulations itself and the presentation we received. And if there are still further questions, send it through to Noelle. But I think there's a possibility that we'll discuss that again. We can see where we can fit it into our program. And then just before we go to the catch-up plan, there is just one thing, Mr. Padachi. We will be on the 18th and 19th September. There will be a People's Assembly, but we're not yet sure where. And on the 20th and 21st, we will, you know, visit schools when it comes to Anna, but not disturb them. And then we'll look at the marking centres and readiness for examination then while we're in the provinces. And we expect to go to the Eastern Cape Limpopo or KwaZulu-Natal. We have to still make a decision around it. Where are we going to? Now let's go to the catch-up plan. Before we start to the catch-up plan, as the chairperson, I'd like to know, because it is a supervision from the court, was this taken to court, presented, or whichever way you're supposed to do it, and whether the court approved subject, and if so, then we can, do a presentation. Thank you. I'd like to hear. Mr. Pachi?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Mr. Likas will give a background about the court processes, and from that we can then maybe go to the details of the catch-up plan with Dr. Gibson and the details. Dr. Watson, sorry, what?
Thanks a lot. Mr. Yakut?
Hello, good morning, Honorable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity. As you know, and this was well published in the media, there was this case of Section 27 versus the Administrator of the Local Education Department, and the Minister was also cited in that case of the second respondent. In terms of the court order, catch-up plan had to be filed at the court, and dates that catch-up plan had to be filed was the end of June 2012. The catch-up plan was indeed duly filed, but the catch-up plan wasn't presented to court. And it wasn't the court order that the catch-up plan be presented to court. In other words, there wasn't an open hearing where the court interrogated the catch-up plan. in terms of the court order, it must be filed with the clerk of the court, and that was duly done. Also, in terms of the court order, court progress report on the catch-up plan had to be filed to the applicant with Section 27, and the first one had to be filed by the 30th of July. And then monthly, the catch-up plan had then also to be progress report had then also to be filed, given to the applicant. The last one to be filed by the end of November 2012. That's in terms of the court order, but there is nothing that that has to be presented to the court, and the court gives to give a ruling on it. That is not the process.
Mr. Parachi?
Yeah, I think then Dr. Watson will give the details regarding the catch-up plan in terms of that which has been shared with the applicants as well. So I don't think there's a problem with making that available to the committee.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Parachi. Dr. Watson, please.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. This morning I am wanting to present the catch-up plan for provincial enrichment in Limpopo. We have designed what is called a 10-point plan, and the core principles that are holding this plan are partnership and participation. And the starting out assumptions that we have made is that teaching and learning has taken place in the province in the course of 2012. And the second assumption that we made is that a collective response to the catch-up is what is required. There are 10 core systemic drivers. Slide 3 gives you an overview, and the rest of the presentation will take you through each of those core 10 systemic drivers. Partnership, teacher development and support, assessment, trial exams, textbooks and workbooks, district development and support, district monitoring and reporting, grade 12 support, grade 10 support, and communication. So to begin with our first core systemic driver, partnerships. All educational stakeholders are guided by the MEDLAC Accord and collectively commit to ensuring the success of the catch-up plan. Teacher development and support. We intend building on what is already in the system, and this involves core training, where core refers to CAT, assessment, including ANA, and workbooks. Teacher support for GET with a focus on ad preparation, and teacher support for the FET with a focus on grade 10 to 12, and the activities identified later in this document. 3, assessment. ANA implementation in grades 1 to 6 and 9, and demonstrates to some extent how well the exemplars are being used and how well the support for the exam preparation are being used. And the countdown to the National Senior Certificate also focuses the kind of support that we attend delivering to schools. 4, trial exams. Unit exams are routinely run in September in schools by provinces and serve as an impetus for learning. The trial exams will continue, and the trial exams will also indicate the effectiveness of learning and teaching in 2012. 5, textbooks and workbooks. We are interested in focusing on access, how many youngsters have got access to their textbooks and their workbooks. And once you have access, the importance of daily use of these resources for teaching and learning. And then the re-emphasizing of homework, and the importance of doing homework and recording homework in homework diaries. All of these three elements will contribute to giving us a full understanding of curriculum coverage. District development and support. Improved capacity to monitor and support district pupils work in schools. The focuses for their engagement will be curriculum coverage and continuous assessment. 2, core, CAPS assessment and workbooks. 3, teachers' portfolio files. And 4, learners' classes and homework. The 7th systemic driver is district monitoring and reporting. Each district will be required to create a war room, which requires the submission of bi-weekly reports from schools to districts, from districts to provinces, from provinces to national office. These reports should account for the implementation of all and other activities. 8, grade 12 support. The provision of the following interventions will run from as close to the 20th of August to the first week of November 2012. Most of these interventions will continue in 2013 with the view of supporting the grade 12 MSc supplementary exams in 2013. The following interventions are planned. 1, camps, spring boot camps in preparation for the grade 12 exam. Mind the gap study guides in 4 subjects, namely life sciences, accounting, geography and economics. 3, winning teams program to support math and science in selected schools. 4, MyTech Network Community Radio broadcasts in partnership with the DBE and M2N with a focus on math, science, English additional language, and one other subject to be identified. 5, learning panel, DVDs, and television supplies to particular schools, and the exam catch-up content to be made available for viewing by schools on demand. 6, Avusa Education Newspapers exam supplements from grade 10 and grade 12 in 6 subjects to be distributed to each learner in all schools. And 7, Avusa Education Weekly supplements with a focus on grade 12, delivered to all learners in all schools. The specific support in Core Driver 9 to be given to grade 10s is similar, but with a focus on grade 10 materials. The timeline supports are also similar, but as close to the 20th of August as possible, running through to November 2012. MindTech Network Community Radio broadcast in partnership with DBE and MTN with a focus on grade 10 content. Learning Channel DVDs and television with a focus on grade 10 content. A Avusa Education supplement, they will actually generate a new supplement with a focus on grade 10. And a Avusa weekly newspaper supplement will keep learners informed about the grade 10 program activities in the catch-up plan in the province. And 10, communication, a clear circular to be distributed to all schools concerning the catch-up plan to ensure that all stakeholders are informed and mobilized. In addition, meetings will be held with district officials and their provincial counterparts. And then we look forward to Avusa's weekly newspaper supplement that's being delivered to learners at schools to include a page where we can keep people continually informed about schedules, radio broadcasts, and the venues for the Learn Channel DVD viewing, etc. The key role players for supporting this catch-up plan include all of us involved in full chain of delivery from national to school level. At the national level, this includes the Department of Basic Education and national stakeholders such as NEDLAC, the Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign, the HEB Associations, the ETBP CETA, SAFE, and our teacher unions. UNICEF is to provide financial and technical support, and in particular is committed to assisting with the independent monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the catch-up plan. The provincial level, the Limpopo Provincial Department of Education, the district and school service will need to play an important role. Their strategic leadership includes the district director, who will receive full authority and take responsibility for the monitoring and reporting on the implementation of the 10-point plan. The chief education specialists for curriculum, who take responsibility for program delivery and all necessary functions delegated by the district director. And the chief education specialist, governance and institutional development, who take responsibility for all governance and institutional mechanisms needed to support the program. And finally, the QLTC coordinator, who will take responsibility for stakeholder relations and coordinate all efforts that require the marshalling of all stakeholders and, in particular, their buy-in. At the local level, we rely on principals to manage their schools and protect learning and teaching time. We rely on teachers being in class, on time, teaching. At the learning, we rely on them committing to their studies conscientiously, the parents and communities for committing to support learners and learning both in the school and at home. The community radio stations will also assist to mobilize their involvement in the catch-up plan. The implementation of the 10-point plan targets the districts in Limpopo. Each district will be assigned a rollout team to support the implementation of the plan. The rollout team will be comprised of representatives from each of the activities in the plan, and these multidisciplinary teams will be led by the Provincial and Delivery Oversight Unit, currently steered by Palesa Tribeca, one of the department's DDGs. The multidisciplinary teams are responsible for meeting with district managers and district curriculum support teams and the provincial counterparts to keep them informed and to provide support where required. The multidisciplinary support team activities can rely on direction from the national DD champions that are identified in the document submitted to the committee this morning. To give you an overview of the activities that multidisciplinary teams are responsible for, if each team will have a partnership representative, a teacher development and support rep, assessment, trial exams, teacher education resources for the appointment of educators, access to textbooks and workbooks, use of textbooks and workbooks, curriculum implementation, district support and development, district monitoring and reporting, grade 12 support, grade 10 support, and communication. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Watson. Any questions from our members, please? We'll start with Honorable Makubela, Honorable Lazmo, Honorable Panshana, and I'll hand over to Honorable Gina Lars. And I'll greet three each.
Thank you.
Not too any long.
There's always contradiction. Where I've got more questions, you give less. And where I've got very few, you give more. So, I must find a way of reconciling.
We honorable Rafa has more.
She's a member. Okay. Chair, I've got two. I followed the presentation, and to me, most of the things, the larger part of the presentation, talks to what normally should happen. You know, and I don't think next year you may come to us and say you won't be doing some of these things. I think those are things that must continuously be emphasized, done, and so on. But I had thought that for purposes of to this presentation, you were required to tell us what exactly has been the impact that was caused by lack of delivery of books in certain grades, textbooks in particular grades, which necessitated the catch-up plan. So that impact was going to tell us your intervention is at the level equal to the impact. Now, I'm not getting that sense in this particular presentation, unless the efforts are made to arrive at that level. The second point, which is part of this very one, is that I had understood that this catch-up plan was also the subject of the court. So it's not something that you are doing outside of what the court as well could have said, even if there are elements of it being rules the department regards as its own core business. I thought part of it is to respond to us within that context, to say this is what you have been required to do on your own and by the court. And this is how you are responding to it. When I listen to you, I'm not getting that sense of saying, are you able to respond to that? Or there are challenges in that particular regard. The last, just to make them rich, because that's what you're requesting us to do, it's whether by now there is a buy-in. Are you satisfied with this? We have a very limited time, which is a concern to me. Whether by now all the stakeholders, so that we are not being told of something we are still going to be doing, and we are not sure whether it will succeed or not. At least if you are able to say, this is where you are. Yes, this is what you want to do, and what has to be done, that's the framework. But at what level are we? If we're talking partnership, at what level are we? If we're talking whether based communication or newspaper or whatever medium that we're going to use, distributing particular material over and above textbook and the rest, at what level? I'm not getting that as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I share my colleague's concerns that this is not a catch-up plan for affected grades. It's what should be done every day. With the exception of one or two things like a war room, which I'll come back to. But I fully expected to get a copy of the plan. I don't understand why we cannot. I have a copy of the plan, and I fully expected to get a copy of the plan and report for that matter. Now, the original plan that was submitted to the courts, Chair, indicates that there would be a study guide developed. This made no mention of a study guide whatsoever. There's also been mention of additional tuition. This presentation makes no mention of that whatsoever. So I would like additional information on that. With respect to the war room, which I think is really the only, it's point number 7 in your 10-point plan. As far as I can see, it's the only point that actually addresses a catch-up plan in any way at all. But you get each district to create a war room. I'm wondering that this is a dysfunctional province, dysfunctional Department of Education. Each district is going to create a war room, and they're going to get bi-weekly reports from schools, which are going to go to the district, which are going to go to the dysfunctional province, and then the national office. And these reports should account for delivery and implementation of what? Of what? Implementation of what? I just don't get... This is so vague. I cannot see the grades that didn't get textbooks, which, by the way, was indicated by Dr. Watson as being important, the importance of daily use of these resources for teaching and learning, that is a quote from Dr. Watson, were grade 1 to 3 and grade 10. This does not, so I know the catch-up plan is only grade 10, not 1 to 3, according to the court order. But this does not focus on grade 10. It focuses, you're talking about Anna, which is only up to grade 9. You're talking about the National Senior Certificate, which is grade 12. This is not a grade 10 focused catch-up plan. One of the assumptions is that teaching and learning has taken place. Now, I'm not an expert in this, but quite frankly, I feel insulted by this constant harping on the fact that, in fact, it was said in a workshop that we had recently, and it might have been by Mr. Mbeli, that an assessment had been done on the impact of the lack of textbook. And from grade 1 to 3, there was no impact. Grade 10, the impact was minimal. But we are constantly being told that there has been a minimal impact. Now, if Dr. Watson is saying, and I believe her when she says, when she talks about the importance of the daily use of these resources referring to textbooks, if Dr. Watson is saying that textbooks are so important, then how can the impact have been minimal? Why are we so concerned even about textbooks if the impact has been minimal? But the fact is that this is not a grade 10 catch-up plan. Well, not the plan at all. I certainly expected to get the plan. I expected to get the report on the plan. But this does not focus on grade 10. Where's the information about the study guide? Where's the information about the additional tuition?
Thank you, Chair. My two colleagues have, in fact, expressed the statement, which I believe it belongs to all of us when it comes to what is put in front of us as a catch-up plan. You look at your local role players. I mean, things went wrong when we had, you are saying for the plan you rely on the foreign role players, principals. Things went wrong, same principals were there. Teachers were there. Most importantly, the delivery, the provincial delivery unit was there. Are you going to use these road players with the same individuals who mess up things? Or are you going to restructure some of the things like the delivery unit? Are we seeing new faces in the delivery unit or the same people? If that's the case, we must just forget. You neglect. I don't get the sense, synergy. We are saying there's war room, yes. But on the other hand, you don't get that sense of urgency, of things having gone wrong, that you want to repair things. Please, can we get a sense? I'm not saying chop people's heads, but we must know what's happening with the delivery unit. Are you changing some people there? What actually went wrong there? What actually went wrong there? Let us give us that sense. We want to hold, as a committee, we have to hold some certain people accountable. Well, please give us that sense. We won't go, we'll forsake our lives until we get that sense of accountability. Thanks.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you. Thank you so much. I was outside most of the time. But coming from the Bompo and looking at two slides here, I have two comments. The first one that I want to comment on, of course, the anonymous here, is entitled Grade 10 Support. I don't know if I'm the only person who sees that. Grade 10 Support. And it has got four, according to me, remember, I'm a teacher, mindset, network, community, radio, broadcast. This for sure will assist. I want to comment that wherever I come up with this plan, I've got grandkids there, and I've got kids in the pump. I think you're doing something. Learning channels also. If this, the television and the challenge is that maybe not everybody has the television. Can we maybe talk of a center where learners can go? And because I think this is a good thing. But if we can have centers or maybe schools where they go, this will definitely assist. Because we want to see change, something to improve. We are not happy when we see I quoted with that sentence. A real education newspaper also. This with exam supplement for grade 10. I think this will definitely assist. And lastly, the Avusa education newspaper weekly supplement. Please keep them up because they will. There's a saying in the biggest book in the world which is, don't rejoice when your enemy is down, but for sure, the that person will rise some other day. I continue.
Jefferson, thank you. It's a pity, Chair, because I think we're all going to sing one song today. Chair, but maybe I will try to be simple as I can. Can you get something else to say? Whoever now goes to Limpopo, let us say the committee wants to go for its oversight funding to Limpopo. What can we say we are following up as to say? You know, if we say the catch plan that is there and we want to assess and monitor whether it has been followed to the letter so that we see our learners being helped towards the end of the year. Tell us what are the things that we can do for? Because for now, it's not clear. I'm not saying it's not there. But can you clarify for us the whole thing, really? This is the, you know, this is what we can say. Are the additional interventions that the department is coming up with as to help and intervene in the whole situation in the board? Can we be clarified on that? Please. We talk of teacher support. Yes, it's something that needs to be done, but maybe there is something additional for now, as to say, from now up until November. These are the things that we have added. So that, again, I think we are asking these questions from the premise to say, we also want to be part of the stakeholder to assist in Limpopo. We want to talk when people are asking to talk and say and plan, you know, not even to say, but put the real picture of the things that are happening in the Limpopo. And for me now, I think if we can leave this room with what we have just heard, there's not much that we can say to say there is something, there is sort of an intervention. Please, I'm just trying to clarify.
Thanks a lot for that,
Anthony.
Yeah. Because what was expected was like some kind of program of action. Now, were the timelines attached? Because first you can speak about the study guides. I'm waiting for the person to listen. Books were not on time. Will that be on time? Nothing is like that. So what you need is your program of action with timelines attached to it. Will you please answer? We'll start with Dr. Watson first.
Thank you, one and all, for your question. I appreciate each one of them. It's a difficult question, and I hope that questions like this can sharpen our thinking so that we move forward clearer and clearer about what it is we want to do. I'm not able to answer all the questions because they would be out of my scope, and I will just pass those to my superiors to handle. But the questions that I can respond to, I will, and that's primarily around programming. You asked how far are we in terms of having the partnerships in place for the delivery of the Grade 10 and the Grade 12 support using radio.
Just hold on a second, Dr. Watson. I think where we should start, well, it was an important question asked by the Honourable Michael Bear. Let's start from the beginning, the impact caused by the delivery of books. Then you'll understand this program that you're trying to put into place. Because I think it came up with many members. So I think a system aware first, and then you start, Dr. Watson.
Yeah, I want to answer, but I needed to get permission first from the person leading the delegation, Jefferson. I don't know whether I'm getting that.
Dilemma. In that,
once we answer one question, even the simplest one, I think we have to answer all questions. And some of the questions would require a more detailed response. Mm-hmm. I accept the questions that have been asked by the members, their views, we respect that. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to give a comprehensive answer in that regard, which could be a written, or we can promise a written response, because there have been certain questions that have been asked, which I think, is the one that, the one that you start with, that indicated, the impact and who is, where you want to put your point finger, then those then create difficulty in answering questions.
Wow.
Dina, would you like to speak? It is not an advocate to Mr. Padayachu. Yeah. Relief can go to data. I think I did not understand what you were saying. Please.
Yeah, I think, Chair, I take our presentation seriously, mm-hmm. and that our responses would be basically on oath, mm-hmm. and therefore, if there's any follow-up, then we need to stand by that. And I think we do not have all that information with the colleagues in the room as well. Some of them have basically been doing certain areas of work, mm-hmm. and therefore, if we have to indicate it to be our own view, presumption, and not necessarily the position of the department.
Fine. I think what is important, because people spoke about accountability. We do have a committee report. I'm not sure if that's a committee report. On our visitor in Papua. Yes. I think we have to make it available, because I think in that report, that's representing to a bit here. We are going to make people accountable. Because you can pick up, with a visit, there should be accountability somewhere. Honourable Lapo, and then Honourable Makubela.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I agree with you. There are things that we need to follow up on the report, but I'm also not getting Mr. Padayachu. I'm shocked about two things, and I hope it's not reason for the shock. First is that the question can't be answered by a senior delegation. Who has got the answers? The second is that Mr. Padayachu said we do not have all the information. Well, if this today is, what's today? The 7th or the 5th? This plan has got to be implemented on the 20th. So that's 13 days from now. Surely all the information that is required is there. If it isn't, why is it not? That I find shocking, and I hope I've misunderstood.
Without
putting more pressure to this particular interaction with the department, I'm just once more reminding you that there's a memorial service going on which has started. But be that as it may, what I wanted to find out from the department is whether this is the intervention in terms of the catch-up plan. Because the department came here knowing that they are going to be presenting this catch-up plan to us, which results in the main from the problem in Limpopo. Hence, we identified Limpopo as, because the catch-up plan, broadly speaking, it's the one that is supposed to be specific to Limpopo because there are issues there. Now that is known. So if that is the case, the sensitivities that now are emerging becomes worrying to say what is it. It may mean that this catch-up plan is based at the national level, may not be known in the public concern. So partly, the fact that there will be no other other information who may need help. Partly it may be understood, but broadly there should be responses based on this. To think, what is this? Because we are saying this is not an intervention. Yeah. So us, it does not, that's what we want. We must get a see that this is interventionist. And if it's not coming, that's where our phase is. See, to think it sounds like normal work that was supposed to be done, not with regard to Limpopo per se. If it's with regard to Limpopo, we need much more. That's all we needed to try and understand. Yes, there could have been other questions by colleagues which may point beyond that, and unfortunately I went out, I may not know, but then with regard to that impact, I think that's what we needed to say. This is the impact we got resulting from the textbook saga. This is what the courts have told us. This is how we are responding to the two.
Chairperson, maybe again without putting much pressure to the condition that is there in front of us today. And Chairperson, maybe when there is communication from the committee to the department, I'm not sure. Maybe it can happen that it was not clear, Chairperson, from what we have received today. Okay, I will propose, I know I'm just opening this to the committee, but I will propose, Chairperson, that we don't entertain maybe the report that we are getting today, because really it's not what we've been waiting for at the committee. But let me say, Chair, definitely next week, we give the department a chance to go and come with a report that, taking in from the questions and the comments that came from the committee today, that next week, Chairperson, whatever program we have next week, but we'll include this one as part of the program next week, then just say we shelve the whole issue for next week, giving the department enough time to come up. I don't even think they are going to come up with an indicator problem, but to take what is there in the office, what is already there, then come back to the street to come in with that. I'm just proposing that we leave this for today and we wait for the presentation and the discussion next week.
Thank you. It's open discussion to committee. Honorable Lathmore, Honorable Ponshana, Honorable Nkanyaho, and then I'll take Honorable Mani. Thank you.
Chair, I agree with Honorable Gina entirely that we reject this. I would put it that strongly, not that we don't entertain, that we reject it. We reject it. It is nowhere near adequate. It is an insult to us and to the Limpopo learners, quite frankly. My question is just on whether we have a committee meeting next week. The parliamentary program indicates Women's Parliament on the Tuesday the 14th, so if we've got a committee meeting, I'm quite happy to go with the suggestion.
Chair, I will support the proposal from our colleague Gina, taking into account the response from Ms. Patiaki. Thank you.
I don't
remember. All right. You might be a teacher.
Unfortunately, I've been outside. I don't know. I might be repeating perhaps what the other members asked here. I see here very, very important two things, partnership and participation. My question is about the teacher unions, bringing them to this partnership and participation. See here, you have unions as role players. Now, what I want to know is whether the union's attitude is positive towards participation in this plan, because that's very, very important, because it is actually the unions, it is the teachers who definitely have to do most of the work in this catch-up plan. Because when we listen to the news and so on, sometimes you hear some of them saying, it's fine,
what we want this. Now, I don't know how far you're going into those things where they say they want this to make this thing work. I don't know, maybe you're setting things in my absence, but I just wanted to get an idea about this.
Honorable Hayaku, I could have called you to order, but I didn't, because I thought, you know, you hadn't got up to speed up, but it's far beyond work. Honorable Mami, you asked the question, we on this question of Honorable Dina, forward.
I'm just saying, when Honorable Hayaku talks to this, to the general public, they can't understand that it's like when a person talks to you over the phone, and start demonstrating what they
I thought it was money, but it's something tangible. Money, just round up.
Briefly and quickly, on the basis that we need additional information and detail to the strategy that is going to be used, it is making sense to say let's meet the department maybe next week. I'm sure they'll be able to respond to all the questions that have just been raised. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And that will be the ruling. But I'd like the report I put the Limpopo to. Because I feel it's in my office, but I'm still looking for it since last week. To have that ready, that we can have our findings and recommendations on it and the total members during this week too. That by next week, we have a complete picture of Limpopo. On this note, I'd like to thank the department for the presentations they made today. And remember that next week, we have the Millennium Development Goals there. We'll do that last, because it's something that we have to do just with the speaker, and we need to have a kind of a report on it, and we'll do the catch-up plan first. Then the Millennium Development Goals, then we can go to IQMS last. And I'd like to thank you for attending this meeting, and also the honorable members, and the way the honorable members conducted themselves in this meeting, and expressing their concerns and their disappointment and the way they want things really done. I thank you for that. Thanks a lot. Anything from you, Mr. Barachi?
Thank the honorable members and the honorable chair.
Thank you. Sufficient.
You are not. No, I'm starting to suspect that there are people that are doing things. Who are causing havoc in the block. And it's politically driven. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nothing will go right until they get what they want. They are fighting and then they are police. And we will not sit here and entertain that nonsense.